It is now time for my favorite Tuesday of the month, the first Tuesday coffee chat with my friends Jack Spierko and John Willis. Jack Spierko is from the Survival Podcast, John Willis from Special Operations Equipment, which if you want to buy some nylon tactical gear, it is the absolute best you can get, and you should check that out at soetacticalgear.com. Jack Spierko from the Survival Podcast has an awesome show over at thesurvivalpodcast.com, and he's been like hitting home runs show after show for weeks now, so you're on a high, right? And that, I mean, not that your show's ever bad, but you've been on a particularly poignant high lately. I'm Nicole Soss from Living Free in Tennessee at livingfreeintennessee.com. It's a podcast about building a life out here in the middle of nowhere and also roasting and selling some pretty fantastic coffee at hollerroast.com. Anyway, how you guys doing this week?
Good.
I'm pretty good. Thanks for the kind words on the recent shows. I always get worried when I'm near a vacation because I'm usually pretty burnt out by the time I'm almost going away.
Yeah, you've been on fire.
Thank you.
And I'm mostly caught up even.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Long plane rides will do that to you.
Yeah.
Okay. I know we were just talking about current events, but okay. I want to talk about snakes.
Cool.
So
I'm all for encouraging John's addiction. Did you see the latest one, John?
I did.
I know you didn't comment. I'm like, I'm starting to get in his head.
No, yeah, those are available. They're about $350.
Yeah, I looked it up.
Not too much.
Yep, they come from Africa.
They're not like a good display animal though. They're beautiful when they're out, but they're more like a corn. They like to hide.
Yeah,
I like animals that like to sit out and be like, look at me.
Yeah, we just got some red-sided garters, very similar to the San Francisco garter, and they're out all the time. You can really see them in a communal tank, so that's cool.
And they're cool. And when they get older, you can start throwing them mice. They'll eat mice.
We're already giving them mice. Yeah.
Okay.
We're giving them pinky mice already. And they did not eat any fish, but we got a water monitor and he eats everything. He eats rat pups and fish and hunts them down. He actually rips the fish apart and eats it.
Oh, that's cool.
But those garter snakes didn't take any fish, which was weird. I've never had a garter snake. That's all I used to feed garter snakes when I was a kid.
If they were captive breds, it might
be. Yeah,
never saw one, felt one, you know.
That's probably why.
Yep, I was actually trying to highlight this comment. I got to hang with the turtles yesterday.
Yeah, we got a couple of sulcata tortoises.
Sounds like John's going beyond the snake reptile into other reptiles.
He's gone full on, man. Like, I think I obsess about things, but like, The SOE is becoming like part tactical gear, part herpetorium.
I've always wanted a private zoo, and that's what we'll probably do, just some kind of zoo. But that's
Are
really
you a breed?
Yeah, we're breeding stuff. That's okay. Amanda. Amanda's more snakes, really, than I am, probably.
So let's go way back. What pulled you guys into snakes in the first place?
I couldn't have a dinosaur.
I don't know. I think because everybody was afraid of them and I wasn't. Like, okay. They're deeply misunderstood and they're so cool. And growing up in Jacksonville, Florida, you know, as a young kid, you could not find a snake. Right? And including some nope ropes and sting strings that you didn't want to mess with. But there was tons of corns and garters and black racers and rat snakes and Everglades rats and kings and stuff like that. And they were just so cool. And I wanted to understand them, so whenever I want to understand anything, you know what I do. I go freaking deep dive and start. Like, back then there was no internet, so I was like going to the library. I read every book on snakes, every book on reptiles. And then there were only so many books, so then I read them again. And then the more I understand something, the more interesting it becomes. And then, like, there's things you can learn enough about that you're like, okay, I'm not really going to learn that much more about this subject. Snakes, there's, you know, thousands of species and subspecies, and now there's, you know, tens of thousands of breeding projects. You're never going to know everything. So even if you kind of cool on the subject for a bit, when you go back, like, there's always more to learn.
People
are scared of them. So that's like, I love things that scare people who are just afraid of it, out of ignorance, because they're not going to hurt you.
we have a lot of people come here and they say that they're scared of snakes. And I'm like, would you like to see some? They're like, no, I'm terrified. I go, look, I'm not, they're all in cages, just like it is new. I'm not going to throw them at you. I'm not going to try to get you to touch them. But if you ever want to see them, let me know. It'll be completely secure. And not a single person has said, every one of them has said, yeah, I would like to see them. Even our FedEx lady delivered live non-venomous snakes. It said right on the box. She's like, I'm scared to death of snakes. I said, would you like to see this? And she says, no. I said, look, I have to take this out anyways.
Yeah.
And I'm supposed to do it in your presence. We can do this at distance. Are you sure you don't want to see it? And she came in, and now every time she's like, hey, I want to see what's in the box.
Yeah.
It's very cool. We couldn't have dogs and cats. My parents just wouldn't let me have dogs and cats. And then living on base housing in Oceanside, which is at Camp Pendleton, there was a knolls everywhere, green and knolls. And I don't know how they got there. I'm guessing somebody just let enough go that they bred, because they're all over Florida.
Yeah.
So I remember catching those and alligator lizards. And then when we moved to Tierra Santa, we lived on the edge of a canyon, so there was bluebellies everywhere. So we were catching bluebellies and alligator lizards. And when my parents divorced, I had a box, a Xerox box, full of these things. And they would get out all the time. And Mom would wake me up on Saturday morning, and she'd say, your lizards are on my drapes. Because her side of the house was where the sun came up. And she was always good about it. She caught a snake that got loose in her toilet. And like, Mom was always good. I eventually had a whole room, the spare room at the house, which was the junk room, but it was full of reptiles, full of snakes.
We used to amuse ourselves with them too, like a daily activity. Like you said, the annuls were all over Florida where I grew up. And I read one of Carl Caulfield's books, and he talked about how to catch lizards.
With the noose?
With a noose, right? You spread and kind of make the noose stiff with some moisture, and that you could just, with like a 5-foot piece of bamboo, you could put it right around their neck, and they just kind of look at it, and it actually helps you get it around their neck.
Yep.
Well, I tried it, and you know what? It works. So I had one of those like floating, like yellow and white bait buckets with the hinged lid, and like an activity would be, well, how many lizards can I catch in one day?
Mm-hmm.
And then I would let them all go. Well, I'd have them on the porch when I was like taking a break and eating a peanut butter sandwich or whatever. And, you know, sometimes they come back and there's like, how did a few of those get out of there? And so one day I figured out we had this big ass black tomcat, and he had worked out how to open the bait bucket, the hinge, and stick his paw in there and like just yank one at a time out. And I went downstairs and I left the bucket up on the porch, and I look, and here comes the cat down with a lizard in his mouth. I'm like, oh, I see what's going on. So that's my love affair with tie wraps too. I learned right then, just reusable tie wrap, and the cat couldn't steal lizards anymore. But it was like, it was a pastime. We were bored. Gen X 80s, man. What are you going to do? Go pick up snakes.
You got to do stuff, something.
Yeah, we also used to, like, you know those, the downspouts come down and they have the concrete things so that the water doesn't erode?
Mm-hmm.
Jacksonville, Florida, anywhere those things are, you turn them over and you're going to find 1 to 30 toads.
Yep.
So we also used to collect the little toads, and then we'd let them all go, you know. But, like, I would bring them all back to my grandma's because she had gardens and shit, and let all the lizards and frogs and shit go in her garden. Not the snakes, though. My grandma was not about the snakes.
When we moved here to Tennessee, toads were everywhere. Like, I mean, you couldn't walk and not step on a toad when we got here. And we had spadefoot toads in San Diego, but they were more uncommon. You didn't see them just like hopping on the sidewalks. So the kids caught toads for days. We had the whole jacuzzi bathtub full of toads. And finally, it just smelled like piss. We're like, you got to get all these out of here. But the whole thing. And the same thing when we stopped in New Mexico, we pulled up at this, you know, kidney harvesting motel. Pretty nasty. And all of us were sleeping in this nasty little hotel room, and the parking lot was all dirt. And we caught all these toads, and we left them in the bathroom, in the bathtub when we left. So the bathtub was full of toads at the motel when we left New Mexico on the way out.
I bet they loved that.
I'm sure they've seen it before, probably. We used to catch bullfrogs. I used to, when we'd fish at night, we would always catch bullfrogs, just flash them with a bright flashlight and dangle that hook in that worm. And then I realized you don't even need the worm and you don't need the flashlight. You can just put a hook in front of a big bullfrog and he will bite that thing and you can bring him straight to you, daylight or nighttime.
So it never occurred to me growing up to be frightened of snakes.
Mm-hmm.
It was a fun pastime to go out and catch them, and you just had to hold them behind their heads so they wouldn't bite you. And in Oregon, the venomous snake is a rattlesnake, so they make themselves known.
Not always.
So when I moved to Tennessee and everybody was on me about cottonmouths and copperheads and the rattlesnakes are 6 feet to 8 feet long here, I got a little taken aback.
Yeah.
At one point. So what do people usually get wrong about snakes, in your opinion?
That they have any interest in you at all. I mean, yeah, they don't. Like, people have said, like, they came at me or whatever, you know. Like, a big redneck myth down here in Texas is every time somebody sees a water snake when they're in a boat, that they're trying to get in the boat with you. And they also think they're all moccasins. And, like, honest to God, like, we have plenty of cottonmouths, but 90% of the time when you see, like, a snake swimming in an open lake here in Texas, it's either a green water snake or a broad-banded water snake or a plain-bellied water snake. They're all harmless or, you know, they're all Neurodia species. So I think that the fact that people think the snake even gives a shit about them is the problem. Like, the only thing you have to worry about is accidentally stepping on one. Otherwise, if you don't bother the snake, it's not going to bother you.
How hard is it to accidentally step on a snake?
It's not common, but I did it, so you can do it.
I've never stepped on a snake, but anytime we're always looking for snakes, most envenomations are going to be, like, when I got bit by a rattlesnake, I was reaching into the bag where I had rattlesnakes. Like, most of it is self-induced. I've tripped over lots of boards. I was very careless as a child. Now I, you know, use a snake hook or some piece of, you know, wood to turn boards over. I heard something interesting the other day. I was listening to a herpetologist on a reptile show. And he said that once you get into East Tennessee, there are no copperheads. Everything east of Tennessee, of East Tennessee, is banded water snakes. And I don't know if I believe it either. But he cited a bunch of people. He had articles published. Yeah. He works for TWRA as a herpetologist. So I didn't look any further into it, but I found that pretty interesting. Nicole sent me a photo the other day, and I said, that looks like a copperhead. It's not, but I would completely err on the side of safety. When guys are like, hey, is this venomous or not? If you got kids and dogs around, I don't have a problem with cutting the head off of a copperhead. Like, we've killed a couple of them on the property. Rattlesnake, I would relocate, because I've never ever, we've gone out the first 10 years we were here, we went looking actively for rattlesnakes. I've never seen a rattlesnake in Tennessee. They're here. People put pictures of them up all the time. Copperheads and cottonmouths, though, I definitely don't want them in my pond.
Yeah, I don't buy
that there's no copperheads in East Tennessee, because they're damn sure in Pennsylvania and Virginia and West Virginia and Kentucky. So yeah. Why would they have this little island that they, you know, this is a typical range map of copperheads in North America.
Yeah. How do they do in the cold, though?
Copperheads?
Like in cold climates.
Yeah, they go in the dens.
Like, yeah, because that's light. The only thing I can think of is it's a higher altitude there.
Pennsylvania is colder.
All of those snakes we named, those are all live births. So when somebody has a picture of one, I point out, I go, there's 20 more of those somewhere. Those things have a high success rate of life. Yeah. And all they need is something small that will fit in their mouth, be it frogs or mice. But everything venomous here, other than, I don't think coral snake is live birth, but your rattlesnakes and all of those viper type snakes, those are all live birth.
Yeah. I saw a rattlesnake dead on the road on one of my walks, and it gave me a really good chance to look at the shape of its head carefully, because head shape from far away is something I can see. I'm not going to see the eyes and how they are very well. So that was kind of nice that somebody ran over that snake for me so I could check it out. But that snake that I sent you a picture of almost died. Because it was striking at tactical.
Yeah.
Acting like a copperhead, and then he realized it was not a copperhead, and he threw it in the bucket and walked it down the road somewhere.
Yeah, that's mimicry, and it's very common with reptiles, period, but definitely snakes. And, like, the head thing gets a lot of non-venomous snakes killed, especially, like, your water snakes. Like, I think that's what that one was. Your green water snakes, your banded water snakes and all. What they'll do, they actually pull their head back into their body and kind of flatten it out and make it look bigger. Just like, you know, like they say, if a black bear is coming at you, look as big as you can. Like, the snake's doing the same thing. Like, leave me alone. And then somebody's like, ooh, look at the head. If you know what to look for, like, since you saw that one, it's really not hard. And it's easier with copperheads and moccasins, as far as I'm concerned, because even more than a rattlesnake, they don't just have that diamond head. They almost have like a sharp edge coming down along like the eye line and down to the snout. And even when one of those other snakes is puffing its head up, it doesn't have that angular, almost arrowhead look to it. And so I think it's really obvious when you're looking at one, but if you don't know, you don't know.
Yeah, I always take a picture and send it to one of my friends who's really quick on the identifying of snakes. My baseline is not to just assault a snake because I see a snake. Because, like, as my friend says, they're a little worm and you're a giant that scares the crap out of them, right? Their first instinct in general is to run away from you unless you have them cornered. Now, Tactical did get one who was posturing. But that's been my experience, even with the ones who quote-unquote stand their ground. They usually just slither away because they don't want to be stepped on. And then at that point, I'm not that worried about it, even if it is a copperhead, although I don't love the idea of copperheads on the property because Tactical's dog and one of my cats has totally been bitten by one, but also they didn't die. They just crawled up.
Somebody said, do snakes have a place on the homestead? And that's up to you. They eat mice, right? For the most part, when we catch, we have seen more snakes this year than the last 12 years combined that we've been on the property. And most of them are rat snakes. They're chicken snakes. And they're about 5 to 6 feet long. They're about this big around, and they're very healthy. And I took them way out in the woods. And it was interesting, Jack. I let this thing go at the base of a tree, and it immediately went up high in the canopy. I've never seen one go straight up like that. And there's a squirrel nest. I don't know that he knew that, but I assume they're eating baby squirrels.
Oh, they'll eat baby squirrels.
Now,
they'll eat anything.
Last year, I had something weird happening in I've got these quail cubby cages. They're like little Fisher Price play school. You know, they're snapped together plastic. But I would come out and I'd have 3 quail in each hole. And I would have a dead one several mornings in a row. I had this dead quail. A snake had gotten in there, eaten it, and then regurgitated it to get back out. I had 3 of those happen.
Yeah.
Yesterday, there's 2 broody hens that have been in my hay barn just nesting, and I've let them go. And they hatched out 2 little chicks the day before yesterday. Yesterday, I come out, and I notice they've pushed all the eggs off of the bales onto the floor of all the hay, and there's a dead chicken laying to the side. And I go, oh, that's weird. I wonder why she died. Maybe she just wasn't eating because she was so broody. When I picked her up, her whole entire neck had that slicked back wet. A snake had gotten her.
He killed her, but he couldn't swallow her.
He couldn't. He got all her head down and then regurgitated. I have a video. I'll put it up on Instagram. So for anybody that's never seen that, it's interesting. That's a good sized snake, and it killed a pretty big chicken.
They have to be big to do that. We lost 2 ducks this year, young ducks. They were like half grown. And I know that's what did it, not so much because of the slime, because they were pretty dry by the time I found them. It's the form they were in. Mm-hmm. If you know, like the rubber chickens comics used
that's
to
exactly
use.
That's exactly how they are,
Like, it was stretched out like that. And the only thing, it would stretch them out like that. And it was over its skis. Like it could kill them, but it couldn't get them down. And we have these, they call them Texas rats. They're all the same rat snake, though. There's black rats with different color patterns.
Gray rat, different paint job.
Yeah, and they get big because they eat the duck's eggs. Mm-hmm. And you know, they might eat 6 or 7 duck eggs in a day if we don't get out there to pick them up early enough. And if they can do that every day, it's like power feeding, feeding a boy or something. And so they get 6, 6.5 foot, and they're girthy because in nature they would never get that much food. So they're being overfed. So I try to catch them. I don't begrudge them. But when they start killing my livestock, well, that's an issue, because the person that asked about snakes on the homestead, a basic permaculture principle is you don't want something, fill the space. So if it was me and I was worried about rattlesnakes and copperheads, I would be getting my hands on every king snake and milk snake I could get my hands on and releasing them on my property, because they will specifically target and eat other snakes, including venomous snakes. I've seen a meme going around a lot lately about you don't kill black snakes because black snakes eat other snakes. I guess it depends on what you call a black snake. If you call a Mexican black king snake a black snake, fine. But most of our black snakes are rat snakes and racers.
Indigo.
And they are not going to be killing your rattlesnakes for you, because It's not that they wouldn't, it's that they can't. They don't have the immunity to the venom that some of the other species do. But I would I eat, I'm your Huckleberry says, would I eat a snake? We serve rattlesnake sausage at TSP workshops. If you want some rattlesnake, come on out here. We sell rabbit and rattlesnake sausage.
Yeah, my second year here where I was cooking the rattlesnake, somebody had, like, it was roadkill too.
Yeah.
The bus driver hit the rattlesnake and we cooked it and ate it.
It's dry.
Yeah. He's like, can you do that? I'm like, sure.
It's just dry. You have to cook it right.
Like, yeah.
I did not cook it right the first time.
I have lots of snakes. I'm not gonna see you kill a snake and then go home and dread over it. I'm not even going to remember it in a few minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's on your property. Do what you're going to do. I caught a speckled king snake, little eastern king, going down a mouse hole the other day, took it and put it under the manure trays in the rabbit area.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure it's the same snake. About a week later, there was a dead king snake in some chicken wire, destroys them. When we built, and it was in there and the chickens were pecking at and eating his carcass. When we put the dam in, we built that whole pond in the back. They put erosion control matting down, this poly netting that had straw all woven through it.
Yeah.
And each day we were pulling three or four little black snakes out of there. I think they're racers or something.
Probably.
Man, it is havoc on snakes, man. We caught tons of snakes every day and we were letting them go on the other side. So there's a bunch of them here, but I'd never seen, like the chicken snakes eat eggs all the time, but I produce 100 eggs a day. Like it's never been a problem. I've never had them actually kill anything until this year and the quail last year.
So, David says,
lots of work.
I've tried eating rattlesnakes, didn't care for all the tiny bones. If you get a big enough rattlesnake, you can kind of do this tenderloin thing and avoid the bones. It's all about the size of the snake. So
I would think there's a ton of meat on those pythons over in Florida. I bet there's a lot of meat on those.
And you have to kill them when you catch them by law, right?
Like,
you
do. Like eel.
You're not even allowed to collect them and bring them back into a breeding program, which is kind of stupid.
I've read, I've been listening to a lot of invasive species videos in the morning, and something I keep hearing is they've only issued 8 permits to hunt those in the Everglades. There doesn't seem to be, it doesn't seem like they want to take care of the issue.
Yeah.
I would assume there's a ton of federal grant money coming in because of that. And they said that there's only 8 permits have actually been issued to hunt within the Everglades. A lot of that stuff you see is outside of the actual park where guys are catching those.
Because I follow a guy named Fisher Garrett, and he's always grabbing shit out of the Everglades.
Yeah. Python Cowboy. There's a couple other dudes. We have a friend that's actually stopped here with some 50 cal air rifles. Those things are insane. And he was, he does all of the iguana hunting in Florida. And it's getting more difficult. Law enforcement is really cracking down on it. But what it was churches and schools and stuff, municipalities would hire them because of the salmonella load from those iguanas where there's children. So they would pay you to come in and eradicate them. And then the state would pay you per tail. And then your clients would also pay you to take them out hunting. But it's very interesting to watch these guys do this. I could watch it all day long. You just got to get down to Florida and do it.
We probably should go to other topics. Just real quick for y'all with chicken coops and you're having problems with rat snakes eating too many eggs. A minnow trap is a perfect snake trap. Take a fresh egg, stick it in the minnow trap, and sit it in the coop along a wall because they like to follow walls. And usually if you have snakes that are active, as soon as you leave, wait 30 minutes or less and go back, and there'll be a snake in there. A lot of times that ass tail's still sticking out, though. And Dorothy just had a tug of war with a snake a couple days ago. We have these baseboards we put down because when we have chicks, they'll fall under the floor. And so it's like 2 2-by-4s with about, I'd say, 1.5 inches of space between them to act as rails. And she sees this egg, and it looks like it's stuck in there. And she starts pulling on it, and it was a rat snake, and he had it in his mouth, but the egg wouldn't fit through the gap.
Oh, yeah.
So she's there biting the snake, and eventually it gave up. I'm like, well, did you grab it? She goes, hell no, I didn't grab it. I ain't touching that thing.
Okay, before we stop on snakes, what's the worst bite you ever took from a snake, and like, how did it happen, and what did you do about it?
rattlesnake.
I was 19. I was fishing on leave from the Army. I stepped on a copperhead. It bit me in the calf. Yep. And there was no cell phones or anything at the time, so I got in my car and drove to a convenience store and called 911 and went to the hospital for 2 days.
Yep. October 1st, 1986, full envenomation, left thumb, ICU, well, next level down, special care unit overnight, 6 bottles of Cro-Mag or Crofab, anti-venom, 6 weeks out of high school, for all the, non-steroidal steroids they were giving me to counteract the horse serum. Really the worst bite other than that, I got bit across the hand by a boa. And then I had a little rosy boa bite me, and he just hit a nerve or something. I got maybe an infection in there, and my thumb was numb for like 2 years after being bit by that thing. And then I got tagged by a big retic a couple weeks ago. Well, I got bit every day a couple weeks ago by retics.
I've been bit by a lot of smaller snakes, and it's just not a big deal.
No, not at all.
I did have a false water cobra doing an SFE.
That's a good one.
Stupid feeding error and latch on, like, and it had its teeth over that metatarsal in your hand, so I really couldn't pull him off, and he chewed for 30 good seconds, and I ended up with a pretty big swelled hand, but it was no worse than a wasp snake.
So here's the trick that I never heard of until about 6 weeks ago.
Okay.
I got bit by a Negritus, Mexican black king snake. It always bites. So it bites me pretty good. And Amanda's like, here, let me put some rubbing alcohol on him and he'll let go. I'm like, no way. And he flips around like he's dying. So I get him back in the cage and I had already fed him. So I'm wondering how he's doing because of the rubbing alcohol. Is he smart enough to, you know, drink some water and such? So I open the cage again. I'm holding a pitcher of water because I'm giving all the snakes water in this rack. And that sucker comes right out through the handle of that pitcher and bites me and locks up again. And like, you little. So I hit them with some rubbing alcohol again, and they immediately let go. You can use tequila, vodka, rubbing alcohol. You just put it in a little spray bottle, and they will immediately let go.
Really?
Yep.
Because I've tried just sticking them underwater. That does not work.
Man, I had Cody. Cody will tell you, we were at the president of the San Diego Herpetological Society, and I had bought this Mexican black king from him when we were still in San Diego, and it bit me. And Cody's like, what are you going to do? Are you going to take it off? I go, no, he'll let go eventually. They always let go. Well, he didn't let go. So I run him underwater. I finally put this thing in the toilet for about 10 minutes, and it still didn't let go. And I got my hand in this dude's toilet, and that sucker was not coming off of there. The alcohol completely works, man.
That makes sense because they're so Listerine. Olfactory. It would like almost burn their nasal and their Jacobson's organs. Yeah.
No, the rattlesnake did not cause me to trip out. I was 5 minutes. I rode my bicycle home to mom's house. She was just coming home from work. I caught her in the driveway. I said, hey, I've been bit by a rattlesnake. So we go to, Sharp Hospital, who is also, that's where Children's is. And we're close to the San Diego Zoo. So they keep all the venoms and everything. And I remember telling mom, my hand is really swelling up. I can feel my heart beating, and it's probably more panic than anything at this point because we're to the hospital within like 35 minutes. But I remember telling her, I'm like, why are you stopping for the red light? Run the red light, run the red light, run the red light. But no, I didn't. Nothing mental other than just, oh shit, I've been bit by a rattlesnake.
Yes. Oh, it looks like Radio Media, Evan's in the house, moving today.
Yeah, Evan was able to acquire some property attached to his property, which is an incredible deal for him.
That's awesome. Keep those radios coming.
Yeah, he's got a beautiful little storefront in a very historic old mercantile building there that he shares with Ridge Runner Blades. They're doing awesome things.
Cool. Okay, so y'all wanted to change topics. I was prepared to talk about snakes the whole time, actually. I had a list of 20 questions. But let's talk.
You, man.
But no, it's okay. I mean, it's interesting to me. Oh, we have a question here. It's interesting to me because just snakes have been a non-thing for me. But then since moving to the homestead, everybody's up my rear end about poisonous snakes. And I'm like, they're just on the homestead. And the ones that eat the eggs move off the homestead, and then some other snake comes in. And that's important to know because sometimes the snake that comes in is not the one you want.
Yeah.
So,
like I said, I would be
king snakes.
If I could find especially my climate, I'm not really worried about it. We have, 2 miles away, they have copperheads all spring. Like, there's baby copperheads because the lake's down there. Yeah. I've been here 13 years. I've never seen a copperhead, and I actively look for snakes, right?
I had a copperhead come into my office once and sit on my desk while I was on a conference call.
Yeah, the
cat brought it in.
The problem with them is they blend in so damn well.
Yeah, and it was like a little baby.
Yeah, it's even worse because they have Napoleon syndrome when they're like that.
Yeah, they didn't bite the cat. They didn't bite me.
If I had a place more conducive to snakes where I was more worried about it, I would literally try to find a breeder who works with gangs and say, sell me all your culls cheap. Like, just all your stuff that's like normal, possible head. It's not going to have any real monetary value. You're not going to keep it for 3 generations to find out if it's hiding something. Like, sell them to me for $4 or $5 a piece, and I would just let them go. Give them to her. She's the one who needs them.
We've been, so snakes have gone way up in price. Like, I used to buy Mexican black king snakes for $7,500. They're all $200 for hatchlings now, and an adult is $400 all day long. So anytime I see a dude with a table that doesn't really have a lot of information, he's bought just a bunch of animals wholesale. Yeah. I buy those if I can get them for $50 because I can just put them in a rack, grow them, and then sell them for $200. And it's just kind of a placeholder. It's good for video. It makes content. But I've got kings if you want kings.
It's crazy because, like, our little pet feed store, right? Like, they do pets. They have a little pet section. Mm-hmm. And they'll have, like an Okeetee corn, which is a natural variation, sitting back there. I'm like, oh, he's kind of cool looking. Like, $180?
Pet store prices.
Are you freaking kidding me? I mean, even a pet store price. Like, I'm like, you know, you can go to, like, the NRCS breeder show, and you can buy those things for, like, $5.
It's next weekend.
Oh,
are you going to go?
No, in Florida.
Oh, in Florida.
Yeah,
John, you got to come down to Texas. We have the best breeders show. Look, see, September 6th and 7th, April.
Oh, you have the Tinley Park one is awesome.
Yeah, you got to come down here. He doesn't leave. He doesn't go nowhere. As far as he goes, is Nashville.
I went to Atlanta last week, 2 weeks ago.
You bastard.
Well, we went to Atlanta and had the hotel room for 3 nights, but we ran into the show and I'm like, what do you want to do? I don't know. I'm good. Let's just go home. So we just shot back home.
All right.
Yeah. Were you going to get mad at him, Jack?
Yeah. We're going to get his ass down here.
So yeah. I mean, if only he was available in November.
On Facebook, there's a field herpetological group.
He just ignores us.
That's completely awesome. And this dude's out on a float tube fishing in one of the big lakes. And he has video. This rattlesnake swims up and gets on the float tube with him and sits up on his lap. And he's got this video of this thing. And it just came out of the water. I just thought it was pretty wild. I don't know that I would have let it sit in my lap like that.
There is a certain amount of what can you do? Because if you are aggressive towards it, it might aggressive back, right? Kind of like wasps.
It depends on the snake. They're not all the same. People tell me, like, you know, this particular kind of snake doesn't bite even if it's wild, and then you pick one up and it bites the fuck out of you. And then, like, black racers always bite, and they're pretty much an asshole species, but I've had ones you can just pick up and, you know, maybe they hiss a little bit and they don't bite. It's all relative to they're individuals. But they're also a very low functioning brain. So, like, when people tell me they trust a snake, I'm like, okay, so you don't know anything about snakes.
So all the youngsters now that are into reptiles, all of a sudden, the new thing is enrichment. You have to give enrichment to your animal, and there's all these huge reptile channels. Most of them seem to be in Canada, and they do videos talking trash about other YouTube channels that keep reptiles, which all seem to be in the United States. And that everything's a rescue now, and we have to save these animals, and they're much smarter than we think they are. And everybody says that your cage now should be the full length where the animal could completely stretch out. Jack, you would, like, lose your mind.
I can't.
It's like the liberals have gotten into reptile keeping.
It's like this is in everything, too. Like, I remember I interviewed Corey from the Aquarium Co-op, and I did this thing. I put some goldfish in a tank, and I made a baby goldfish. He's like, only one made it, but, like, there was a baby goldfish there. So I put it on the Facebook group and said, look, I didn't even try it. We have a baby goldfish. And he's like, then the goldfish police came.
Yep.
Oh, no.
Right? Yep. And this is like 2016. This is not new. Right? Yeah. The goldfish police came. And I'm like, what I was talking about, like, dude, there's a police force online for fucking everything. When I first interviewed Jessica Mills back in, like, I'm going to say, like, 2012, 2013, she said that, like, when she was getting ready to hike the trail, like, she asked a question about a water filter. And it just, water filter police came. And you're stupid and you're going to die and, like, you can't use that one. And if you don't get this one, you're wrong. And it's like, good God, what? Like, the internet is the greatest and worst invention of all time at the same time.
We're the snake boomers.
The snake boomers.
Yeah.
That's what we are. We are boomers when it comes to snakes, John. Like,
I listened to your show yesterday.
I grew up, like, reading books by, like, Carl Caulfield, who's been dead since the 40s. Right? I mean, like, that's, like, if he was like, who's your biggest mentor in herpetology? It would be Carl Caulfield.
Tom Crutchfield is still around, man. Lizard King. Yeah.
The reason that I have my philosophy of how to deal with venomous snakes is because of Carl, though. Like, which is, there is no need for you to ever put your hand on the snake.
Yeah.
No, you can do everything with hooks, clamps, and bags. So don't touch it. And if you don't touch it, you won't get bit.
It can't, yeah.
And the way he phrased it is, what I should tell you, and it's in The Keeper and the Kept, it's one of his best books, what I should tell you is not to do it. But I know you're going to do it. So I may as well tell you how to do it properly. This book was written in like the early 1900s, like somewhere around 1905 to 1915, somewhere in that range.
Yeah, American rescues are now a niche income. Yeah, you have all these people that don't work, and their whole identity is that they've adopted this handicapped dog that should have been euthanized, and now they've got 20 wheelchair dogs, or they've got a snake that's got a broken spine, or you've got a poor bearded dragon that they didn't put any UV light, so the thing can't metabolize calcium, and the thing crawls around on its front feet. That's awesome if you want to, you know, keep that animal alive and care for it and everything, but the damage is done. Like, you can't reverse that.
But John, have you ever seen Tango the Dwarf Cayman?
I've tried to buy a dwarf caiman the other day. I've not seen Tango, though.
You got
to
look up Tango the Dwarf Cayman. You will end up buying one.
I'm getting a dwarf caiman. I'm waiting.
They have him on cane and shit. They like put their hand in the tank and he crawls up on them. And
yeah, check out the water monitors, man. Those are like they're the third largest lizard in the world.
Yeah,
but they're like velociraptor. Like they made those animals in Jurassic Park to be super smart.
Yeah. But I just whispered to Nicole. She knows what I said. I said, watch what I'm about to do. Tango has been trained to fetch a ball, John.
You don't have to talk me into it.
Cayman that fetches balls, John.
I'm already getting a cayman.
Are you going to teach it to fetch?
Now he's going to become. He's like, you know how Paul Wheaton became obsessed with growing a freaking lemon in Montana?
This right here.
That
is a private message. With a dude about a dwarf cayman. He's four hours from here in Knoxville.
But did you have any knowledge of its ability to fetch a ball?
I did not.
So now you do know. And now you can't not know it anymore.
Yes.
You will know that forever. It will be in your brain. And you'll think.
Well, I'll have videos of it in like 6 weeks.
Tango was this big when they started with him. So I don't know how big this dwarf cayman is. Because they grow like 4.5-5 foot.
Well, the females grow considerably larger. It's always the males.
Don't get a female.
The males.
Yeah, you want to, like, certain reptiles, you want to pick whatever is going to be a little. If you want dwarf, go for dwarf.
We just got a 16-foot female retic over the weekend. And usually when people show up with a 16-foot snake, it's a 12-foot snake.
Yeah.
But this is an actual 16-foot, 120-pound female albino retic.
Wow.
Yep.
Okay. We're going to change subjects for a second, but you can totally talk about snakes the whole time.
No, what's happening
with the
whale? The
show is about snakes. Okay, I'm having trouble keeping quail chicks alive. I've seen multiple sellers in my area say they are quitting quail. Any tips?
Temperature, too hot outside, too cold outside, wind, like what's happening to them? What's the situation where you're having, like I haven't had any problems. If we hatch out 50 quail, inevitably some of them just die, just like chickens. That just happens. But what is the situation that you're having?
And he's losing chicks, not adults.
I'm wondering about genetics.
Genetics, or are they too, like, young birds will die in a heartbeat from hypothermia.
Yeah.
Are they getting wet? Are they somewhere they're getting hit? Like, sometimes, like, you think it's warm enough, but if they have enough cross breeze. The other thing I've seen with, especially quail, and ducks do this too, if they get wet, they'll all pack in a corner, and the combined weight of everybody compresses and kills the one on the inside. So, I mean, I have to know what is actually happening. I don't know. Are they eating? You know, if they're refusing to eat, it's probably a genetic problem and you need new genes. I don't know. Have you had success before? Like, is this a new thing for you? That's also...
Are you
kept them alive and all of a sudden they're dying, it's probably the something genetic. If this is your first time, it's probably you.
Are you buying baby quail or are you hatching them out? We always hatch them out.
That too, yeah.
Yeah. Bang Bang says young chicks also die in the heat.
Yeah.
Young chicks just die.
It's been a hot summer.
And they just die, man. They'll die in the cold. They'll die in the heat. They'll die if they get wet. Some of them, you're going to have a percentage that are just not going to make it. I just had a turkey die that well started, like months old turkey, just went out dead. I don't know why it died. It's dead. The dogs ate it now.
We started losing turkeys, and we ended up finding out that one year the reason we were losing poults is the biggest young gobbler was killing its brothers.
Oh.
He was like psycho. It was the year, I think you were here, Nicole, where David ended up processing a turkey for me. Like right before dinner.
I remember that one.
He climbed on the back of one of the hens and just like, it looked like Freddy Krueger tore up. He was psychotic. I'm like, you're fucking dead tomorrow. Like, I don't have time to kill you right now, but we had to put that hen down and David processed it.
I know.
My intern Cody was like, I just wonder if that dude's become an axe murderer or something. Cause I'm like, well, he'll take care of it. No, I want to see. And then he was just standing there with this weird, fascinated look while David was processing the bird. Not an interested look, more like a young Dexter look.
That's not the kid that put gas in your diesel truck. It is. Didn't know the ratchet. I know you did a show with Doc Barry.
Yeah, he didn't know what a ratchet was either. That was...
I know you did a show about quail with Doc Barry, but when people bring up quail, I always say, you know, there's this other bird you probably haven't heard of. It's called a chicken. It gives you a massive egg. They're more durable. Things don't kill them as often.
The beauty of quail is if somebody wants to produce their own meat,
yeah,
6 weeks you're yanking heads and wings off and popping out breasts and leg quarters. I mean, you know, you're 8 weeks from the egg to a meat product, and you can process it with no tools.
Yeah.
And that's what they're good for.
Rabbits.
Rabbits, yeah.
Rabbits are good.
I like the sound the quail make when you walk out at night and you hear that little dinosaur noise. Like, I like quail.
When I first got my quail that I had, anyway, I don't have them anymore, but I got the Texas A&M white ones because I believe the propaganda that they got bigger and laid bigger eggs, and they don't. The other thing about the white ones is there's no way to tell roosters from hens by looking at them. So the guy I bought them from, when I went back to him, I said, well, how do I know my roosters? He goes, do you drink beer? I'm like, well, yeah. He goes, get yourself a six pack. Sit in front of the cage, drink some beer, and when one crows, grab his ass and band him. He said, that's all you can do. And I'm like, I'm going to Browns. Like, I'm not doing this. I killed them all and brought in Browns after that. I'm like, no. I didn't mind doing it once, but I'm like, if I'm going to keep breeding them and bringing new birds in, I'm not doing this.
We do the giant Coturnix, the Japanese Coturnix.
Yeah, they're the same. They're just, there's Browns, and then they... The Texas A&M white ones are Coturnix quail too. They just bred them white for some reason.
Interesting.
They're supposed to have bigger breasts, lay bigger eggs, and have lighter colored meat. And they don't do any of those things. It's exactly the same. It's a white quail. It has white feathers. That's it. If you were doing them as a meat animal and you were plucking them, they probably make a prettier carcass because if a pin feather or two's less, it doesn't show up as much. That's about the only, which I don't pluck quail. It's too much work.
And you can
I got context from Dan. He said he had no problems 10 years ago.
Okay.
Got back into them this year, lost them gradually, 50% loss until they got feathered.
What do you feed them? Because
so we had a bunch of quail
deficiency, like add some yeast flakes to their feed when they're ticks and see if that, because I had that happen with ducks where I was losing like one or two a day in a brood, and we started adding mealworms and yeast flakes to their feed, and that problem went away, and that was before we were on the feed that we're on now. It doesn't seem to have the problem, and it was D12 deficiency.
High protein
meat bird, but
high protein game feed, and even on that, my quail would not lay eggs. Yeah. I had to add mealworms, and once we added mealworms, then they started laying or black, and we would rotate between mealworms and black soldier flies, and that got them to start popping eggs out again. And we were running eggs like they, at 2 years old, they were laying eggs still.
Awesome. So it just occurred to me too, another way that you can lose them, especially as they begin to get a little bit older as young birds, even before they start laying eggs, if they're showing prolapse, it may be that you're not giving them grit. Because I've had that happen too. They need grit, and they can have some.
I did not give any grit. I didn't ever think about that.
Are you? Where are your birds though?
Mine are in elevated in little.
Oh, okay, they're elevated. That's surprising. Maybe the feed you're using has some natural grit.
Maybe so, because it's game bird. Maybe that's the same thing we have the turkeys on right now.
Yeah, I mean quail. The two big things you want is grit for them. If they're not on the ground somehow, like in an aviary, grit and a dust bath. Because they get itchy with mites and shit. So that's another thing that this person could try is make sure they have grit and make sure they have a dust bath. Because whenever you give them for a dust bath, put them somewhere you don't care or put it like something high that they have to get in because they go tornado in that shit. But they really, really love that. And happy animals are healthier animals and taste better.
Brian, are you messing with me about the pheasant? You know my pheasant story, or are you genuinely asking about pheasant? I bought this beautiful golden pheasant, if you've never seen one, at a flea market. And I brought it back here thinking, well, the closest thing to it is the turkeys. It'll probably stay with the turkeys. So I had it in a pen, and I fed it for a couple days. And when I let it out, I never saw it again. That $200 golden pheasant
went away.
Gone to the wind. I don't know. A fox probably got him or something, but I didn't have him anymore.
So my opinion on a pheasant is the only reason you would keep it is because they are pretty good eating, and they're kind of like royal game birds or whatever. But they're kind of assholes, and they have a propensity to do what John said, which is leave. I mean, they're a true game bird. We have a true game bird that's stupid. And is incredibly loyal and stays where you put it if you feed it. And it gets pissed off when anything it doesn't know about shows up. And it's called a guinea hen. And the guinea fowl is a game bird. Like in Africa, they literally hunt them, though they're not difficult to hunt because they don't. Like if you want to, like back in the days of the big safaris. Well, during the days of the big safaris, what they would do is they all crowd around like water holes and shit. So all like the hunters would stand off in the distance and then they would send natives out and scare the shit out of them to make them fly so that you could actually, you know, because it's unsporting to shoot them off the ground or whatever. So
you could literally get them with a boomerang. We have the ugliest.
You're going to keep something for something different, exotic, cool meat, whatever. Like I would do those before I would do pheasants. And I shot a lot of pheasants and, you know, the leg on a pheasant is a lot like the leg on a turkey, except it's got less meat on it, so it's less worth the pain in the ass. It's like a couple dozen freaking tendons in it that you have to get out of there if you're going to bother with it. Whenever you've done a turkey drumstick and you find all those little, not really tendons, they're like the small bone on a chicken, but there's a bunch of them. Pheasants have like twice as many.
There's several kinds of, there's all kinds of guinea fowl too. Like the ones we get at the farm store, those are the ugliest ones. There's some that have these blue, bright blue circles on their feathers. Like they're very peacockish looking.
Yeah.
My neighbor got a peacock, got a male peacock, and it went out looking for a hen. So it was here for several days. I think he was trying to mate, you know, with my chickens and stuff. But then he got a female and it brought him back home and they had it in a cage for a while. And then they released them both and they both left and never came back. We think maybe one of the neighbors killed it or something, but because the neighbor had said that he had complained that the male was at his place and the male peacock had flogged his wife, he said, which I don't know, maybe it never happened here and he was around tons of people, but that's kind of the same thing. You buy this hundreds of dollar bird and then it just takes off and you don't have it anymore. You have to keep them in runs.
Okay, I have been plagued with cracked chicken eggs for months, 30 a day. I have high-quality non-GMO feed. I've tried everything. Oyster shell supplemental liquid vitamins. They're on pasture.
It's weird.
It is very weird. And my only thing would be, I guess they're probably laying in a coop. Are you making sure you have enough bedding under them? Because we often have, even duck eggs, which are much thicker, if they drop one on a hard surface, you'll get those little pit cracks. But if they're like broad cracks, I don't know. 30 a day, too, a lot of birds. So
how many nests
are there? They land them on top of each other.
Yeah,
they have to do the ash pickup at the end, and then you get a drop.
Are they, yeah, how many nest boxes do you have, too? Like, I use 4-foot nest boxes from Hen Gear, and they roll out. And then I have other coops that are just 10-by-10 dog runs, and I'll have 6 holes on one side, 6 holes on the other side. And sometimes they'll all use one of the nest boxes. Sometimes you'll find eggs in multiples. And then some years, they'll just completely switch nest boxes for no seemingly reason.
And she said they are a little older. I've not had that ever happen.
No, I have birds here that are 4 years old still laying eggs every now and then. It's not. I don't think it's that.
Yeah, my hen is 7 or 8 years old at this point, and I get an egg 3 or 4 times a year now out of her. There's only one chicken left on my property at this time.
Oh, so you have rollout nest boxes, and this is. I don't know what would be doing that. Are you sure it's not? I have a chicken somewhere that I'll pick eggs up and they're hollow because they've eaten them. Are we sure that we don't just have a chicken in there that's trying? I have also chickens in my rollout nest boxes that'll reach in and try to roll them back so that they can brood on them.
How many chickens for the 4 4-foot nesting boxes? And do you have enough padding litter in their nesting material? What has changed is usually the question. If it wasn't happening, what has changed?
Do you have I'm guessing what she's talking about, they're kind of like a quail cage where the egg rolls out and the chicken can't get to it anymore. Like, can they stick their head through? Because there are egg-pecking chickens.
Solution
to that is a crock pot.
Take the ride. What's up, man? Yeah, we were talking about that earlier. I had, you've seen my quail. They were elevated. I had a snake get in several times, eat a quail, and then regurgitate the quail because the snake couldn't get back out of the cage. So we were finding these quail dead that were all elongated and like seemingly covered in saliva. I just had a chicken dead night before last night. I found it yesterday morning, same thing. And its head was all slicked back and wet, like almost like somebody had glued all the feathers down. A big rat snake had coiled that thing up, killed it, swallowed the head and neck, and then regurgitated it because it couldn't eat it.
Interesting.
All right, let's go back to snake. Well, guys, in the comments, ask some questions. We can talk about whatever you guys want. Yeah. I've always joked with Jack that we should do a snake show once a month, and now I have a whole entire SOE reptile channel. I've launched a whole nother YouTube channel and Instagram and everything.
And he has a pretty cool snake setup on development. Get back out there and see what you've put together.
I have a 16-by-60-foot building that's supposed to be delivered in 2 weeks. And then I have a 12-by-16-foot rat house that's already on the property. That's all air-conditioned and everything.
That'll be nice.
So we have a question. Hey, Alabama, what about weasels? Don't they just drain blood and leave the bird? No.
They pull their heads off.
That's up there with geese drowned in the rain. I mean, it's just, I don't know where it comes from. But people say it and repeat it. I've seen a little ass weasel drag a chicken that weighed 3 times what it weighed up a tree. So I really have a hard time even considering that myth. Not to mention if geese drowned in the rain, there wouldn't be a goose left in the world.
I do have weasels pull heads off and leave the body.
Sure it's weasels?
Pretty sure, because we found the weasel.
Got it.
Eventually.
It could be.
Well, and that's the thing. So Lily Farm's saying, I don't know how to catch him when I'm at work. Cameras.
Yeah, that's what I was going
to do. If you're really, like, especially if it's something that you're turning into a side hustle, it might be worth putting a Yo link or something up to see what they're doing. And you can look at the recording, and it's a pain in the butt, but you'll find it if it's a chicken peck.
I don't know if anybody's at home, Lily Farms. When I pull eggs twice a day, I get way more eggs than just waiting till the next morning because there are chickens eating them, and especially they're eating eggs. Like, I feed, when I have eggs that are dirty, I don't ever wash an egg. We produce so many eggs. If I have any chicken poop on an egg, I crush them over dog food. That's the only time I feed the dogs kibble, is to put eggs over them. And then I also have some pieces of cement in all of the kennel, in all of the chicken runs. And I just take those eggs and just smash them. Like if I have too many eggs inside, like we're producing so many eggs, we can't even freeze dry them all. All my employees get free eggs. They have for the last 5 years. I sell them for $4 a dozen in the community, but I'll have four Sterlite or Rubbermaid totes full of eggs, like 76 eggs each one. And when I get too many, I take them and I just bust them over the concrete, and the chickens eat that all up. So all the protein goes back in.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about this. I was assaulted by the news last week because I was somewhere where news was on somebody's television all the time, which felt like an assault.
Mm-hmm.
Was it just the news, or was there an uncommonly large uptick in the number of weird psychotic murders?
No, it does seem like there's an uptick.
Yeah.
Like in places, in all the usual suspects, but also places where they haven't been happening, it seems.
Yeah, we have that one dude that they're trying to get in Tennessee that killed four people.
Happened here. What a lot of people might not know, he had been in prison, I think, twice. He had just gotten out of prison after a years-long stay. I think he was in there 9 years. All four of the people that were murdered were all his immediate relatives. He took the child and then left the baby somewhere. They found his vehicle a couple days ago in Jackson, Tennessee, which is an hour from here. And then there was a bunch of video of SWAT guys in full kit walking through, looks like a park yesterday, like they're going to go find him or something.
Yeah.
I've seen an uptick, too, in people, like, glorifying it. Like, I saw somebody posted some shit. It was like, be careful, Trump, your Luigi's out there somewhere. Like, okay, that's a good way to make Secret Service and FBI come to your door. But
yeah, absolutely.
I've seen more and more shit like that, not just about Orange Man either, other people on Goose, both sides.
Goose Tactical, the guy here in Tennessee is captured. What about the dude who strangled his two daughters, who was supposed to be like a Sierra instructor, ranger guy that went to the mountains? Have they captured that guy? Something else I keep seeing, you had this dude that just drove from Las Vegas to New York, went in and shot an off-duty officer in the lobby who was security, got on the wrong elevator. He had a note with him, and when he suicided himself, he shot himself in the chest so that they could study his brain for football injuries on the brain. But he got in the wrong elevator, didn't go to NFL headquarters, ends up in a subsidiary of BlackRock headquarters, shoots a security guard there, I believe, and then shoots a employee, is what they keep telling you. What they're not telling you that I keep seeing, the employee was actually the CEO of that company, and that is the housing side of BlackRock that's buying up all the housing developments and then renting them out. That is who was murdered. She was actually the CEO. And there seems to be that media doesn't want to say CEO because this has happened, not this time and Luigi, but apparently to hear the conspiracy theorists, this has happened actually several times now.
It's a lot. Well, there's the couple that was attacked. Was it in Arkansas?
So the couple that was attacked, are we talking about at 3 a.m. in the morning after the jazz concert?
No, the hiker the man was attacked and stabbed.
Yep.
And then the mom got the kids to safety, came back to help her husband, and also got stabbed. Yeah. And that would be, I'm guessing they didn't have a gun on them.
Well, those are very long, brutal events typically, too, because there is no response and there is no cell coverage there. And if there is, you're
go ahead.
You're forever from help. I mean, you know, when you need a cop immediately. Help us, you know, minutes away when seconds count.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's that happened in Arkansas, and that's Devil's Something is the park. And I've hiked there, and he's right. You're on your own. And then we also had at the beginning of last month the whole ambush on ICE down here in Texas in Alvarado, 10 people arrested and charged with murder because there was a cop killed during that. But one of the guys, his name is Song or Soong or, yeah, Song, Benjamin Song, is still on the lam. They have not caught him yet either. And he was like the ringleader of it. And he was up here in Dallas and they thought they had him and he slipped. And I think a cop was injured in that confrontation too. Not killed, but injured. And they put out a blue alert.
Yeah, there seems to be quite a bit of it.
Is that the signs of an aging and dying and writhing empire? Is that just one? Like, is it not really a thing into itself? Is it just a larger part of a whole litany of symptoms that we're going through at this point in history? Like, I look at society and I go, if you wanted to completely control a society and break it apart, the best thing you can do is divide it almost perfectly in half.
Well, I think somebody turned the key in their little toy soldiers and wound them up and put them in motion.
I think that's possible.
Oh, yeah, there was the Idaho fire trap.
There's a bunch of crazy shit around that kid. Have you seen all that?
No.
Yeah, there's all kinds of shit around that kid.
And then we don't know anything about most of these people, right? And including, like, the dude that shot Trump, was going to try to shoot Trump, but never even got a shot off, that dude. Tell me something about him other than his name.
Yeah, why do we know everything about this guy that just killed these people at Black Rock, and you know nothing about the kid, exactly? Multiple phones, drones, incendiary device, not just incendiary devices, actual explosives, they said.
No, I'm not talking about him, John. You're right about him, too. I'm talking about the dude.
Ukrainian guy.
I think he's American, but he went to Ukraine a lot, and he went to Hawaii a lot.
He'd been on Fort Bragg 127 times.
While
not being in the military. Who was he meeting with?
There was like an AK with a duct taped on scope. It's
sounds
like
very
converse. Like most of these like shooters, like they're out there with like a Daniel's Defense $10,000 AR. It's a 19-year-old kid, like in Alvarado or whatever it was, or whatever that town was down in South Texas.
Not only was the Daniel Defense, the optics were identical on the Daniel Defense as well.
Yeah.
It's like they were issued that kit, but the SKS bullshit with the taped on scope is very reminiscent.
Opposite is what I'm saying.
Very reminiscent of Enemies Foreign and Domestic, Matt Bracken's book, which opens up where they have an SKS on a tripod and they just figured out the ballistics to get it to drop into a stadium. So they launched them like mortar rounds.
Yeah.
I'm just saying we should probably know something about a guy that attempted to assassinate President of the United States and had multiple links overseas into U.S. military and a kid that several months earlier, like, killed somebody and hit the now president of the United States in the ear.
The kid who was in a BlackRock commercial.
Yeah. Yeah. Just so you know that when you were saying BlackRock about the recent thing.
Yeah.
That's not BlackRock.
Correct.
That's it Blackstone.
You're right. It's a subsidiary of Blackstone.
Well,
that's
it was.
Right.
So what it was is they were part under the same management. And in the 80s, they split and they're completely independent now. And BlackRock's the company that's like in your 401k. They buy all the mainstream investments.
Yep.
Blackstone is the alternative investment kind of hedge fund group. And they're not linked, but they come like from the same root.
Josh said that you're seeing in, what did he say here? You're in liberal shitholes like Seattle, graffiti saying kill your landlord is the new mindset.
Yes. I mean, don't tell me this is not related to shit like this asshole they want to elect to mayor in New York and in Chicago.
Yeah.
Right? These are pure socialist Marxists.
Well, you have the same thing where that couple was just beaten down by the mob of future.
Cincinnati?
Future, maybe it was. At 3 in the morning, right? And you can't pronounce that mayor's name. You can't begin to pronounce that mayor's name. It's the same shit.
This country's headed for socialism. I mean, just straight in a bucket towards it. And there's probably 30% of this country right now that would elect someone who says, I'm a Marxist, communist, socialist, and I will make sure the rich feed you, and would vote for that person for president if they were on the ticket.
What they want to say is, we will feed the rich to you, is what they want to say.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
While maintaining their own personal rich.
Wear a $7,000 dress at a boutique gala that says eat the rich on it or tax the rich.
Well, it's the Hunger Games. It's exactly the Hunger Games.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know that book series was going to be prophetic.
Yeah. They all are eventually, aren't they?
Look at any of their galas and their fundraisers. Yeah. And you know, AOC, that she plays that girl from the Bronx, but she's actually very, very rich. So is what's your idiot mouthpiece over there?
Jasmine Crockett.
Crockett, highly educated. Yeah. She didn't come from the hood.
She's a spoiled rich girl that went to private school. She has a better education than 95% of America. And so, she pretends to be stupid for street cred.
You had a Democrat-funded talent contest that interviewed hundreds of people.
Yeah.
And that's where AOC came from. And when you hear AOC's interview, she says, "I went to a talent contest and I really didn't think I was going to get picked. They had so many other people that were more talented than I was." But she had the look and she had the ability and she could take the programming, and that's when they ran her for office.
She was marketable for the purpose that they wanted her for. Like, people think that, like, you know, like the best way to get into Congress is to be really smart.
No.
Probably not. And certainly not for some districts.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you have to fit a certain mold for some districts, especially with the gerrymandering bullshit that they do. That's another fun thing we have going down here, John, right now. So we have an attempt by the Texas legislature to redraw the districting maps for voting.
Yes.
Which will pretty much guarantee the Republicans 5 more congressional seats. And, of course, the Democrats say the Republicans and Donald Trump are cheating. Well, this is a completely legal process. Is it wrong? Probably. But it's not cheating if it's legal.
Well, they said they could arrest
them. And they do it. Check out the map, the map of the districts in, like, Maryland. And you'll see some shit that's like, you know, like the snake. I don't want to say it because it'll come back, but like a snake. There is a district in Texas that's so old that it hasn't been redistricted yet, and it's one of the ones they're going to do. It has people in San Antonio and Austin with the same congressperson representing them. And it's like it's like a snake. And it goes in this little narrow band, has a little bulb on. It's more like a dog bone. Like they draw in a cartoon. It's got like a little bulb on each end and a long tube connect. That's over, you know, so it's like a couple hundred miles long. San Antonio and Austin are not right next to each other. And I'm like, this is a legacy artifact of, because the last time the Democrats won a statewide race in Texas for anything, like senator, governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general, 1994. 1994 was the last time Democrats won anything statewide in Texas, and it was Ann Richards. And that's who Bush Jr. knocked off to become governor of Texas. That's how back in time that is.
There's arrest warrants out for all those people that got on that plane. Do you think they're going to arrest any? They're not going to arrest any of those people.
Let me explain that, though. There's two different concepts for arrest. One, they absolutely will do. One is a civil arrest, and that's the one that's actually awarded out as a warrant. They don't go to jail. They are picked up by Texas Rangers or other designated law enforcement. They are taken against their will to the Capitol building, and they are put in their seat, and they are forced to sit and vote or not vote, but they must show up. Because the reason they ran away is we have this rule in Texas. If you don't have enough of both sides, you don't have a quorum, and you can't conduct a session, and then you can't vote. So this goes back. I have no idea how far back that they've been doing this. But it goes back to like the 1800s, and that's when the rule was set up. And it was so that, like, if you and I were like one party and Nicole was the governor, we couldn't go, "Hey, here's what we're going to do. We're not going to tell anybody. And we're going to have a session and we're going to vote, but we'll make the announcement." But back then, if you were out in Lubbock and they said, "We're having a session tomorrow, good luck getting there in time."
Yeah.
That's why they put it in place. But the Dems running away, first time I heard that, I was driving to work, 1994. I'd never heard anything like this in my life. But something was going on, and all the Democrats went to New Mexico and back then they didn't have people paying for them, so they were like in a flea bag Motel 6 out in Albuquerque or something. And they refused to come back. They've done this over and over and over. And this is the thing. It doesn't ever work. The Texas governor can call an emergency session anytime he wants. So once they run away, then they literally put surveillance on them. And when they call the next session, if they try to run away again, they do go arrest them. They just don't charge them with anything. They just make them go to the Capitol and say, "Do your fucking job." What Abbott's trying to do, and we don't know if this will work or not, there's two angles. One is Paxton said 2 years ago, that's our attorney general, that it would be up to the courts, but it is possible that for running away and abdicating your seat, you could be kicked out of office.
As it should be.
And the court would have to, the Congress would not impeach to do that. The courts could do it. That's a test. They don't know. The other, this is the other potential arrest and warrant, but it's not issued yet. What Abbott did is he asked the Texas Rangers to investigate and refer for prosecution if applicable. Does what's happening now meet the threshold of accepting a bribe for political behavior? And then you could be prosecuted under state law, actually prosecuted. And the concept is they asked, they publicly solicited funds to pay their fines of because it's a $500 a day fine when you run away.
Yeah.
So they publicly solicited funds, plus somebody, probably Pritzker's family, provided them a private jet on which to run away on. And so they've been given money, and they've been getting a thing of value in return for their actions. I think that's a long shot too, but that's the arrest. So there's people saying stupid shit that don't know any of this. Like, well, shouldn't you find out if you can do charges before you order the arrest? It's two separate things. It would be like, we come to your house with an arrest warrant to arrest you because you failed to appear in court when you were summoned. And while we're there, oh shit, look, there's five big white bricks laying on your table. Now I had probable cause to be in your home because I was serving you with a warrant for arrest, and I observed the white bricks. Am I charging you with possession of heroin or cocaine? I don't know yet. What are the white bricks? Maybe it's Nicole Sauce. Maybe she didn't come to court. She's a libertarian. And maybe those white bricks are bags of flour. We have to find out.
Could be.
So that's Washington the other stars. Side of the investigation is, does this meet the threshold? And I don't think it does, but it gets the right all wound up and happy.
Well, that's the thing. It's all a marketing ploy.
Yeah.
I've been watching Texas do this for years.
Yeah. It's something that they really need to get us an emergency session in place with, like, sergeant at arms, guards to keep the Democrats from leaving, and change that rule. That rule needs to change. It's a terrible rule. I don't vote, so it's not my circus or my monkeys, but I believe if you're going to play in that system and you are elected to office, then your job is to show the fuck up and vote and speak for your people, not run away to another state.
It's the same thing with Congress. They were supposed to have a vote, and then they decide to go on vacation. It said they snuck right back in that night and voted on some other bullshit.
Well, they're also doing this shit now. What's his name? Fucking Thune is denying Trump what's called a recess appointment. So they closed the House down early to avoid Massey forcing a vote on the Epstein shit. Then the Senate closes down as scheduled, so that leaves open the interim appointment process. And Thune says basically every 48 hours we're going to do some kind of little quorum thing to deny the ability of a recess appointment. Just in case anybody doesn't know, Thune is the Senate Majority Leader and a Republican. He should be trying to get Trump's people in. I don't care if you hate Trump. The Senate Majority Leader, who's in the same party as the president, should be aiding the president and getting his appointments accomplished. That's just common sense. So there's some bullshit going on. Just what is that one? I don't know. I don't have time to stay. I'm more interested in snakes than that.
Well, I mean, we can always go back to snakes.
I always get pissed off when people compare, like, a politician to a snake. I'm like, stop insulting the snake, man.
One has some value.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, the only good congressperson we have that I consider, like, 100% good is Massey. As much as I love Ron Paul, you know, Rand Paul still has an AIPAC minder. That's all I'm going to say, right? So you can't be truly America first if you accept having an AIPAC minder. I'm sorry, you can't. Massey is the only one out of both houses that does not have an AIPAC minder. He's never taken a dime from AIPAC. And he's the only one that's in the Republicans that Trump has specifically singled out.
Yeah.
That's true.
Isn't that interesting, you know? And here's what I love about it. He's going to fucking win his reelection.
Yeah, he doesn't have to worry.
He doesn't. As much money as they're spending to try to get rid of him, he's going to win real. And he's going to win it hardcore, win it.
He's got to. If you ever see him in person, get him to tell you about the phone call from Donald Trump berating him. You're such a grandstander. You're just the all-American grandstander. Massey has a great – he should do a stand-up bit about it, actually.
Yeah. He's gotten more badass looking too. When he was young, he had kind of this like almost naive look to him. Since he lost his wife and dealt with all this shit, he's looking pretty fucking hardened, battle scarred, yeah. Horn.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah.
Oh yeah, that was sad.
John Johnson here says Massey lives off grid and has chickens.
He absolutely does. True. Homeschooled all the kids. Yeah, 100% he does. He's got patents on all kinds of shit for homesteading and type stuff. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
He's got a self-moving chicken tractor that has a winch that runs off solar and auto feeds. Yeah, it's all incredible. We saw all of that at Rogue Food.
Yeah, the clutch capacitor keeps coming back, which is he basically off-grid automated his chicken tractor so it would run itself so he could be in Congress doing what he needed to do and his wife didn't have to do stuff.
Yeah, basically. 7 or 10 days, he said.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yep.
Yep.
That makes me think of the dude I had on. I can't think of his name now. That was basically mass producing those.
Oh, yeah. The moving barn person.
The cluck. Cluster cluck.
There's some massive ones. They're about 20 to 30 grand. But, I mean, they're big. And they pull the thing sideways fully, you know, like 10 days fully automated. You just have to have the room for
it. Let me bring this up, John. Have you seen this guy's stuff? This guy is freaking awesome. He has the cluster cluck, which is the chicken tractor one, but his bigger one is the stock cropper. So that's the cluster cluck. But the stock cropper literally can have like two different ruminants, like pigs on one side and chicken or even cattle or goats on the other. And he's got one. It's got like chickens in the middle and like, you know, let's say you'd have pigs in the front and then you'd have like goats in the front and then pigs and then chickens. So it's like three different animals and it is autonomous, runs on GPS and it moves itself.
They're nice looking too.
And one of the coolest things I've seen this dude post was just his cluster cluck, which is the one that he's trying to market to like homesteaders. That's just for chickens. And it was, he set one up and he has this really long driveway with just a grass lawn. And it has like a bottom grid to it so that when it moves, it kind of makes the birds go with it. And the grass was still brown from the winter. And the line that the chickens were on was all green already.
Yep, yep.
But the crazy thing was where the grid touched, it wasn't. You could see the print of the grid and, you know, like the beginning of it where you could see the print of the grid. That thing was there 40 days ago, and it was still showing the grid. It had not greened up. And what he said is it must be the bacteria on their beaks where they're pecking.
Oh, interesting.
Not just the waste product, because then you wouldn't see the grid 40 days later, but where you see the grass green up first is where they're disturbing the actual soil.
So he doesn't actually.
That dude is freaking awesome, man. I need to get him back on and see where he's at.
Yeah, so that was a really good interview.
So he's looking for investors. I don't see any actual prices on these things.
I don't know where he's at with the, because he wasn't actually shipping yet. I think he's still there on the wait list. You can join the wait list.
The ones he has built look nice.
Yeah. I mean, he's got plenty. I just don't know that he's shipping them. He's got two goals. One is for like people like us. And the other is he wants to like radically transform row cropping. So the stock cropper is designed for these bigger ruminants and all, and he's figured out how once you set this up, you can basically, like, if you're a corn farmer, you plant corn, you know, a certain width row, and then a certain width row of forage, and then a certain width row of corn, and a certain width row of forage, and you run the cropper in between the rows of corn, and you get higher corn yields per acre planted. Because your outer edges of the corn produce more corn because they get more solar exposure. Plus, they get the nutrient flow. And all you do is the next year, you just flop the rows.
Mm-hmm.
And you make more money because the value of the pork, like that's his main crop for that, is pigs. The pig value exceeds the value that row would have produced in corn.
Cool.
And it's a really great idea. It's just, it's pretty expensive to produce. And let's be honest, if you were like even a small scale row farmer, so like 1,000 acres, you can't do that with one of those things. You need multiples of them.
You also need relatively flat ground.
Yeah. Yeah. Relatively.
Relatively.
You can't be doing it on your property.
We're not doing that here. Yeah, no.
You do it on John's.
We could do it on John's.
The last I checked,
should not keep going because some of the spots.
The last I checked, this aluminum chicken tractor I have out here is $3,500 now.
Whoa!
Now it's expensive, but I can move it one-handed. I can push it uphill because it's got big, you know, like off-road baby stroller tires on it, I guess. And then it because it's aluminum, it doesn't rust.
Yeah,
tarp, that heavy duty vinyl tarp, I've had that thing out there since 21, I think.
Okay.
And I haven't brought it in the winter. Like, I mean, I run birds in it in the winter. I just run them super heavy so they produce heat. And it's been awesome.
What I've always used for tarps is USGS shelter halves.
Yeah. Yeah, those
just
work good.
Spray them once a year with, I can't think of what it's called now, that shit that's waterproof in a can.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If you don't do that once a year, they don't last. But if you do that once a year, they'll last for a
Something
decade.
Guard. Scotch Guard?
Scotch Guard.
Yeah.
Scotch Guard.
So they have stopped making Scotch Guard stain guard. Like, you can't find it anymore. I only know that because Amanda has these tops that she wanted to stain guard. And I said, why don't you just use Scotch Guard? She said, because then you can't wash the, like, you can't, because they're waterproof. It's something different. But because of all the PFAS, a lot of this stuff that you have just used your whole life, they've taken off line.
Okay, so shelter halves, forget what I said. They're not cheap anymore.
Nothing's cheap anymore.
As soon as I said that, I'm like, I wonder if they still are. Because I used to buy them for like $9. You could probably shop around, but the first place I found I had them was $34.
I'm a fan of the billboard tarp.
No, those are great.
We've been using the heavy-duty tarps from Tractor Supply just because they're black.
Yeah.
And I like the way they look. And they come where the grommets go through. They're actually folded under, and it's a much thicker material than your typical tarps are. Somebody sent me a link to a tarp company. I don't remember the name of it, but those looked very promising, too. All they do is tarps.
Tarps, and more tarps. But like Nicole said, if you can find someone where you can get billboard,
you can buy them, billboard.com.
Yeah, and you can buy used ones for less, or you can just get ones that aren't printed on for more, and then you don't have to deal with your Jimmy John ad in your yard. Which
we had a giant McDonald's one, and that
was really useful.
I have a Walmart one.
You just put them like print side down, is in the back blank.
It's white, yeah.
It's white, okay.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it's a running joke here because I used to use those for walls for my event tent when that was what we used.
Okay.
For events here.
Jimmy John's.
And they immediately put it up on the inside of the tent where we're doing presentations with the logo stuff inside.
You should have sent them a freaking bill.
I was like, no, you got to rehang those, man. Like, it's too distracting to look at the Jimmy John's ad while somebody's presenting.
You should have just, like, sent, like, to, you know, like, hello at accounts payable at jimmyjohns.com, you know, and just sent it to accounts payable at Jimmy John's and just sent a picture of it and said, we have run your ad. Please see the enclosed invoice. They might have paid it.
Well, there's a whole fraud thing going on where people were submitting. I think it was to Amazon. They just kept submitting invoices to Amazon, and Amazon paid it out to the tune of like $1 million or so.
Yeah.
And they just arrested that dude. They just indicted him.
I've got a great display tarp story, Nicole. I don't think you've ever heard this. This was pre-Nicole in my life. We did a trade show in Denver. And we wanted to have something in the booth to announce who we were. So that black tarp that I have in the shop building with the Survival Podcast logos and all on it, that's when we bought that. So we had it printed locally, and we mailed it to Colorado because we were flying, and it's long in a box. And I think it cost us like $35 to mail it. Well, when we were packing up the trade show, they said, we can pack up your stuff for you and ship it to you. And I thought, well, maybe it'll be twice as much, but fuck it, you know, fine. So we rolled it in the box. They didn't even pack it. We just brought it to them and signed for it. So I get a phone call like 3 weeks later. We have your tarp and need to deliver it to you. It's at a warehouse in, you know, we have your package in Little Rock. And I'm like, great. Well, what's it going to cost me? $580. I paid $150 to have it made. I'm like, well, then you can keep it because I'm not paying that. Well, you have
right.
to. No. Well, we'll keep it if you don't. That's fine.
You
so they kept
it.
Calling me and knocking the price down. And finally, I'm like, listen, it was a lady. I'm like, listen, ma'am, I'm going to explain this to you really simple from an economic standpoint. I can go get another one for about $90 because part of the cost was the design.
Set up, yeah.
So it's all set up and done. I just have to call them up. So they'll send me another one for $90. She hangs the phone up on me, calls me back the next day and says, we'll do it for $90. I'm like, I don't think you understand this at all. If I'm going to pay $90 to get it back,
put it
and
in
it's been to a couple shows and it's a little roughed up on the edges and all, I might as well get a new one. So then she hangs up on me again. Like a week later, they call back and go, will you pay $70 for it? I said, I'm tempted to say no, but I would have said yes to $70 in the beginning. So fine, I'll do it. Then I had an office up there. This box truck, like a 16-foot box truck, rolls into our parking lot for freight, which is why they were charging me so much. Opens the box truck. There's literally nothing in it.
Yep.
Except about a 10-foot long box, about, you know, 4 by 4 inches by 10 foot long. That's the only thing in there. And I'm like, you people are the dumbest sons of bitches. Like, I don't even, why would you do that? Why wouldn't you just throw it in the mail like we did? Nope. And like I said, it cost us like $35 to ship it ourselves.
They spent $70 calling you.
Yeah, they more than that, probably.
As I told you, you might as well just keep it at this point. And they just want, I guess they wanted to clear, like it's success if they clear their books, I guess. Like, how much do you think it costs to drive a box truck like that from Little Rock to Hot Springs and back? It's about a 140 miles round trip in a vehicle that probably gets, what, 14 miles to the gallon?
Yeah. I mean, I pay $300 for a pallet of coffee that weighs 1,400 pounds.
Yeah.
To come from New Jersey.
I guess trade shows are a racket and most big companies just pay the bill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I said you should have sent Jimmy John's an invoice, Nicole.
I should have. Yeah, except for I don't want to be indicted for that.
No. Sponsorship. You send a picture.
Yeah.
You send the picture up. You're not going to get indicted for that.
It's true. I probably won't.
They're never going to know.
They're going to get me for something way more fun if
I'll email you back and say you were never set up as a vendor, and they'll send you the form. You fill it out. You're in the system.
I've got a federal ID. It's fine.
It'll be a good story if you do.
Yep.
Harbor Freight heavy duty silver black tarps are good too.
So it's Tarps and All. I think it's tarpsandall.com is the company. They've got, like, if you look at the mill of the tarps you're using, this other company has tarps that are 3-4 times the thickness.
Does anybody still care about tariffs at this point?
I don't care. I think it's the most over hyperventilated thing on the planet. I also think that it's odd as shit that the left is against tariffs. Because first, they've always been for protectionist trades policies. Unions, tariffs, all of it. Second, the mantra of the left is tax the rich. Okay? If Walmart imports $10 million worth of shit from China with a 25% tariff, do you know who pays the 25%? Walmart. And I don't mean does. Practically, yeah, in the end. I mean at the time the tariff's paid, Walmart does.
Yeah, we pay it here.
So why are you for taxing the rich but not for taxing the rich if you're on the left?
Your shipper collects it. If I have something come from overseas and it's
shipped. You pay it, right?
If it's shipped here via UPS, UPS collects the fee.
Say that like 3 times in a row for the slow kids that do not believe me when this can be verified with 30 seconds of internet search.
Well, they're not going to look
at the tariff, John.
They're not going to look at what they're squealing. They're just going to do the polar opposite of what their opponent wants to do.
Yep. I don't know. I think that it can certainly be overdone, but Trump seems to be pretty damn good at it. Because what happens is the country's like, we're not doing it. We'll double tariff you. And he's like, okay, fine. We'll triple tariff you. Fuck off. I'll talk to somebody else. And they all come kiss the orange ring.
There's tons of plants setting up right now. I mean, when they did that whole thing on the cars, Chrysler, whatever the company that owns Chrysler and Jeep and everybody, they shut down a bunch of factories in Canada and immediately came back and started standing up all those plants in the United States, in the Rust Belt. And they're building and they're building battery plants right next to them. And that's Trump's whole thing is the EPA always blocks them on it. He said they're going to They're going to fast track it. But not only that, they're going to put power generating facilities at each of these plants. So they'll have their own power. So we don't have to worry about how they're going to power that.
Yeah. They're built. Everybody's building power now.
Yeah.
Nuclear is probably going to be back soon in a real way. And modern nuclear, because nuclear is, if you go to any operating nuclear plant in the United States today, the minute you walk through the doors, you're in 1966.
Yeah, you are.
You really are.
Yeah, man. Yes, you are. Yeah.
And you're like, it's not safe. Well, first of all, most of these places have been operating for 50 years or more, and they haven't blown up. And I don't know if you know this, John and Nicole, but since 1960, we've made advances in technology. We actually have more technology and more advanced technology today than we did in 1966. So if we could turn up a nuclear plant relatively safely in 66, I'm thinking. But you know what the left is angry about now with nuclear?
The nuclear plant on the moon?
That is it. You do know. They're very upset about the fact that the part of the plan from NASA and Trump, because Trump's got to be connected to it, is that they're going to build this colony on the moon, and they want to put a nuclear power plant on the moon. And I even had one person, and I like, check their profile. Is this a professional troll? No, they were dead serious. If the nuclear power plant goes explosive on the moon, it's the end of all life on Earth.
Because?
I don't know. It's going to blow up the moon?
Change the orbit?
It's
going to
blow up the moon? Right? Like,
how big is the moon exactly?
Pretty big.
Yeah.
I mean, it's small, but it's compared to Earth, but it's a pretty big body. I don't think it is going to eat. Have you seen the craters that are like the size of states on the damn thing? Like,
didn't we launch nuclear weapons at the moon?
I don't know about that.
I'm pretty sure we
I'm
sent
down with that. Let's see what happens.
I thought we sent missiles. I thought we sent missiles to the moon. If you look that up, I think we did.
Did we nuke the moon? Okay, I'm gonna look it up. I'm gonna go on record and say no here, but
did we nuke the moon?
I never fear.
Hey, it's
did
pop quiz
we
question.
Nuke the moon.
Yeah.
That's how I'm searching for it. No, the moon has not been bombed in a sense of a large scale nuclear attack. However, there were plans during the Cold War for the U.S. and the Soviet Union to conduct nuclear explosions on the moon as a show of force. These plans were known as Project A-119, and in the U.S., Project E-4 in the Soviet Union were ultimately abandoned due to various factors. So they didn't do it.
Hmm.
They talked about doing it.
The moon is a third the size of the Earth.
Yeah, you're not going to nuke it. I mean, Japan's still there. It's not gone.
Yeah.
I think the only place really safe to blow nuclear shit up is in space. And I'm pretty sure it happens all the time, whether we do it or not. This is a big, giant orange fireball that's basically a fusion reactor. I mean,
they're standing, I think it's well underway. They're standing Three Mile Island back up for full power generation for Microsoft.
Yep.
And I thought they're bringing San Onofre back online for Amazon or something. I thought I saw that.
They are. Amazon's like putting a data center right next to an AI data center. Some of these places are building full facilities just so they can co-locate an AI data center. That's the big growth. Now that's, I think, your next big giant bubble pop. It ain't Bitcoin like special retards think. It's the AI space. Now, I'm not saying AI is going to fall apart, but I just feel, I look at this and I think this is 1996, 7, 8, 9 right now. In AI, like that was for the internet. The internet's going to take over the world. Everybody throw money at it. And the internet did take over the world. And a lot of the money that was thrown at it, it was called the dot-com bubble. And it went pop for those youngins out there that weren't around or were too young to pay attention. You're crapping your pants when it happened. So, you know, you could have bought Google or you could have bought Yahoo. And they called it Yahoo because that's what you said when you sold it after the broadcast merger before everybody else held on to theirs to make a lot more money and ended up with $30 share stock. And it'll come back someday. And yeah, it's like $38 now. So I think we're going to see a giant bubble pop in the AI space. And a lot of the players will be successful and a lot of players won't. And some will go away. Like, what was the big internet site that became, like, the guy became a billionaire overnight when it IPO'd
And eventually people figured out that nobody knew what it did. World something, World Net, or World Com, or
World
something.
Com. It was World Com.
Yeah, World Com. And like, it was like, it, like he was on the cover of magazines and shit. And
yeah.
As the whole, like, you know, polish began to wane a little bit on the whole space, people started looking like, well, who's going to go under? And then people realized, like, what do these people, like, what do they even say? And they didn't even say they did anything.
No, they didn't. There was like a big old, I don't know, Good Morning America interview or something, yeah, where it was very clear they did not know what they did.
They don't know. You don't know
and
what you
like
did.
Right after that, they tanked.
It was just like a symbol, like, you know, like a logo. And
but they appeared to be running servers and doing things.
Yeah. Yeah, but what did they do? Telecommunications maybe company that went bankrupt. Okay. A major accounting scandal. 2002, second largest, longest. No, that's not it. That's, I thought.
No, I know. I'm trying to remember the name.
That's MCI. That's MCI.
Yeah.
It was World something. I thought when you said WorldCom, that might not be the right term. I don't remember what it was called, but it was GlobalNet or there was some. It was.
I literally used to use this as an example about why marketing matters.
Yeah.
Isn't one of these major cell companies providers is just went out of business, shut everything down?
No, they weren't a cell provider. At least they would have done something.
No, I'm saying there is a cell provider right now, not AT&T, not Verizon. One of the other massive ones has completely gone, shut down.
Huh. I don't remember what it was.
Now we're like, what is it?
Somebody out there's got to know there's enough people in the live streams. One of y'all have to know what I'm talking about. Come on, tell us. So we stopped.
I thought it was WorldCom, but
how long ago was it, Jack? Like
it was around 99 that it.
Yeah.
The dot-com bubble blew. It was one of the first ones that really fell apart. And I remember watching. It was one of those, like, you know, the 80s, the decade that made us. 90s, the last full decade. Like, it was one of those type of shows that I saw it on. I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that now. And it was just that. Not only did nobody know what they did, they didn't actually even say they did anything. They were just there.
Yeah.
And the guy's like broke today. He was a billionaire for like 6 months.
Yeah. No, I know. I mean, like, I can see his face. That's why this is bothering me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does this mean I'm going senile? I'm not remembering it. Yeah, it was bad. But. And it was because nobody knew how to sell their products on the internet, so they helped people sell their products on the internet. I know that's part of what they were doing. Yeah.
I want to know now.
I know. John's like, these guys, we're not doing anything fun now.
Talk about snakes again.
Yeah. Well, snakes were what I wanted to know about as part of this show. That was my whole thing. Because I did develop more of a respect for snakes after moving to Tennessee, because sometimes it is a venomous snake I see.
Yeah, there's venomous snakes out there. As I scroll through a list of companies. World Online, that might be it?
No.
No?
I don't think so.
No, because that was in England.
So there's going to be this text at like 2 in the morning,
yeah,
sometime in the next week from Jack on Telegram. That
yeah,
says,
when he remembers it.
It's going to be, I thought it was something calm.
I do too. And it was, I thought it had some kind of world thing in it. You're making.
I don't know what I did, but it was fancy.
You have your.
WorldCom went bankrupt in 2002.
Yeah.
Reactions turned on is what it is.
Yeah, I don't know where that setting is, but I could find it, I'm sure.
Let's see if I can. Come on, damn it. There, no, I won't do it. I thought I turned them on. There it goes. Yeah, see?
We're just here to play with the stupid thing. I thought it was WorldCom, but.
I don't know what it is now.
I didn't know they were defined as a telecommunications business, though.
No, see, they're saying AirTouch or VoiceStream. It was. See, those companies failed, but they did something.
Yeah.
This company didn't do it. This company is what people think Broadcast.com was.
Yeah.
Broadcast.com was the first company that actually streamed content when people were on dial-up still.
Yeah.
And they had customers, and Yahoo ruined it. It was like, an amazing, I'm actually going to have Patrick Seaman, who was the first official employee of AudioNet, which became broadcast, on the show next month.
Yeah.
He just released a book called Streaming Wars, and it goes through the whole history of, like, this dude, like, used to break into Mark Cuban's house when he was on vacation. Because Mark's brother would come over to Mark's house and lock the door that was supposed to be left unlocked. And they actually had a server farm in a room in Mark's house. So Patrick would take a ladder and climb up on an eave and climb in the window to reboot servers in the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm.
They, when they were streaming like NBA and NFL and stuff like that back then, there was no equipment for this. So he would fly into a place and go to Radio Shack and buy a whole bunch of shit. And, like, jerry-rigged the whole thing up and get it going. And they were able to actually – they streamed the first Super Bowl to 500,000 people with parts from Radio Shack.
Yeah.
And then Yahoo bought them and just – they merged it in Yahoo Video, which was going to defeat YouTube, which did not. And then it just went away. It's absolutely nothing now. And it was the one of the highest buyouts ever. And the only reason I know this is I was working with broadcast at the time. I was a sales engineer for a company. I did design data centers for them. So I knew when people were saying, like, it's just a domain name or whatever, you don't know what you're talking about. It was a very cool company. And they actually had sales. That's a crazy thing for the dot-com bubble, right? They had, like, when you walked into their office down in Dallas, there were guys in cubicles with headsets on, like, selling contracts. Like, you could listen to them closing deals. And what they were doing, they were calling all these radio stations all over the country and putting radio online before anybody else was so that you could reach more people and things like that. And they had something like 850 radio stations. They had a massive amount of content, like content libraries of like audiobooks and shit like that. They had what were really the first podcasts, but they didn't have RSS yet. They had all that shit. They're basically like Kodak with the digital camera in the 70s.
Mm.
They had everything before anybody, and then Yahoo bought them and pissed it away.
That is what they did.
Yeah. Yahoo. Like I said, you said Yahoo when a Spock split.
Yahoo!
Somebody else's problem now.
I still have their email. I still email people at Yahoo to this day.
You know
what I haven't seen in a long time is an AOL address.
What is... I was just going to ask
I see them.
What
see
is
them.
More boomers yeah. than an AOL email? I don't know, but you know
MSN?
Who sent you AOL email, Nicole? Doc Bones.
Yeah.
They're
okay.
Still on AOL. That's the one I see all the time. I'm like, how do you have – when I worked with Sage Telecom, we were developing marketing campaigns. This might even be silent. It's so boomer, right?
Yeah.
There were people that when they filled out the form for their email address, it would be like if you were Nicole@AOL.com. www.nicole@aol.com. It's like, no, that is not your email.
It never works.
I had to write a script that basically stripped out all the www dots.
Yeah.
To rectify the email so they would become deliverable. And there were way more. Now, this would have been 2004-ish, 5-ish, somewhere in that range. But there were way more than you would have thought.
Yeah.
www.nicole@netzero.com. Like, yeah, this person's 80.
We see AOL addresses all the time still.
Do you?
Uh-huh. On orders, yeah.
What does AOL do now?
Email.
That's it.
they put out lists like newsticles, like summary of other articles that are news.
Their lead story today is Ozzy Osbourne's official cause of death has been released. I think we all know Ozzy Osbourne's cause of death.
What are they saying it is?
I don't know because it's
you have to pay for it. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
No, it auto scrolled and it won't. It's so poorly designed that I can't make it. You know what? I did just discover something though. GlobalNet. GlobalNet was the company we were looking for earlier.
Was it?
Yeah, and now it's World Class IT Training. Somebody bought the domain. But I think it was Global. It's not. I'm wrong. Fuck it.
Nope.
What do I know? I don't know shit.
If I could remember the name of the CEO who lost it all, then we would have it. But
yes.
It's not coming. Yeah. I let that one go, and I'll figure it out later.
The AOL site is so poorly designed. When I try to backclick on the scrolling thing that showed me the Ozzy Osbourne story, it lights up the the menu on the left side of the page.
Yeah.
Well, I can't. So I can't tell you, John, what. I don't know. Official. Here it is. No, it's not even theirs. It's somebody else's. Fuck it. I don't know. We all know why Ozzy Osbourne died. He had Parkinson's and he did drugs and booze his whole life.
That would do it.
Yeah, I mean, wasn't he in his 80s?
Yeah. Yeah, I think he was 79. 79. Now, here's an interesting thing, because you guys grew up the same time I did, and I think this is fascinating. Ozzy Osbourne started making music in the 60s. I think Black Sabbath launched in, like, 66. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
They just did their Back to the Beginning tour, like, the last time he was on stage. They put him in the throne. He came out. He sang Mama, I'm Coming Home and stuff. And if you watch the video of that, there's these people in the audience, like, awestruck and sad. But they're not our age. There's, like, you know, 20-year-old girl crying while he realizing this is probably the last time he's ever going to be on stage ever. And everybody knows he's maybe got a month left.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anybody that you can see that is making music today that 55 years from now, when they die, young people of that time are going to give a square root of F all about? Where we have people from our music from the 60s up till the 90s that's still mainstream music today. I don't think today's music has that longevity in it at all.
No, it's in like a 2-year cycle.
I mean, who would it be that's big right now that anybody's going to give a shit about in 40 years? Nicole's a music person. She knows music like we know snakes.
Yeah.
And her brain is going blank right now. With
no, there's nothing. I got nothing.
Anybody you would say that's still big today was already big in, like, let's say 1990.
Right, and that's the problem. All the big names are older.
Yeah. Who started making music, let's say, 2010 forward? Will anybody give a square root of fuck all about 2050?
And everybody I like who's new, they're small, too, now.
Yeah.
Like, I really like Ren, but nobody knows who that is.
No. No, we're like, you can go through this list of, like, 70s, 80s, 90s bands that not only do we listen to, our kids listen to.
Yeah.
And their kids' kids.
Yes. My grandson loves some of the, like, the 80s metal rock and stuff like that, and, like, 90s country, both. Like, as different as those two worlds are. Or, like, 70s classic rock, like, I'd say the Eagles are probably as popular today as they were, maybe not in 78, but 82. I think one of them's dead. I
mean, yeah.
Ren. So you got a fan here.
I know. Somebody else actually knew who Ren was. Ren is incredible.
Yeah, several.
Yeah.
Ren, he's a very diverse, capable musician.
I've just never heard of him.
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, the only reason I know about him is TikTok.
But I keep telling you, the group you need to look up is, now they just went out of my head. Midline in Harlem is one of their songs. Tedirce Truck Band. Tedirce Trucks Band. There's nothing to do with trucks. The two lead people are Tedirce and Trucks is the guy's last name.
I've seen this Ren kid. I've seen him. I've seen him on Instagram.
Yeah.
But you would dig Tedirce Trucks, Nicole. I mean, the chick that's the lead singer, she's right in your wheelhouse for her kind of music.
Okay.
And she sounds like you're expecting like she's got a deep voice. She's expecting like a Billie Holiday looking person or some shit. And it's like her Etta James or something. And she's like a 40 something blonde soccer mom.
Mm-hmm.
And their band is like an 18 piece, multi piece band. It's they're badass. But they will not be listened to by my grandson's grandchildren. That's not going to happen.
Right. Well, maybe if Ren really is coming up in popularity, because a lot of people have heard of him, he has the writing capacity to be memorable, I would say that.
He's Welsh, huh?
Yeah. He's a Welsh rapper, not rapper. Like, okay. He just does whatever.
White boy rap that's not
and
rap.
And he can sing. Well, he also can really sing. And he can really write, and he can really play guitar, and he makes...
I'm going to check him out.
Yeah, he makes some good videos.
David Hosfeld, the young girl at the country fair wearing a Misfits t-shirt, has no idea who the Misfits is. They sold that shit at Hot Topic or somewhere, and they liked the way that looked. Brando, yeah. My video guy, has misfit tattoos on him.
So Green Skull is saying Disturbed could maybe be that. And what are they best known for? A cover song from Simon and Garfunkel. I'm sorry. Like, that's... No, right? You see what I'm saying? Like, the music peaked from about 66 to 2002. All the music. Rock, pop, country, rap, all of it. I'm sorry. All of it peaked.
Storytellers are what we're missing. You're right about that, man.
Yeah.
Because all the content now is 15 seconds.
Yep.
Yeah, and part of the issue in the music industry is the commercialization and the... They will digitally analyze songs to see if they're similar enough to other popular songs before they put money behind it. So if anything endures, it'll have to be something that bubbles up from the bottom. So, because if you think about the songs that we all really love, like really, really love, they're like weird-ass songs that was an experiment very many times. Yeah. And you're like, okay, yeah, that would never fly in the commercial side now. They're doing all that like pitch bending, so you're never out of tune.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. So they'll, I watch this guy on YouTube who shows the sine wave of like Julia Garland or whatever singing compared to pitch bend now. And he says the reason her voice was so interesting to people is she's not always on pitch. She's adjusting to match whatever she's singing with. And that makes that like adds emotion. And then over here, it's very robotic sounding because they fixed every possible problem or in air quotes problem.
So there's this dude on YouTube, and I won't play it because even though it's a mashup, we'll probably get copyright bullshit or something over it. But this guy right here, his name is Sir Mash-a-Lot. And in this mashup,
I know who that is.
He combines six country songs into a single song, and it flows.
Yep.
And at one point, he plays the guitar solos of all six, and you see it in the timeline on the audio mixer. They're all playing simultaneously from six different songs, and it sounds completely normal. And then if you dig into his channel, he basically cracked the formula that you're talking about, like, does it sound like other sounds? And he created a completely new song with digital, something digital doing the lyrics. And all of the music is made by a computer. The lyrics, and this is before AI. And you listen to that song and you say, you know what? If they put that song on country radio, it would be a hit.
Yeah.
It's soulless. It has no meaning. Because when you're talking about the guy was saying about storytellers, if you go back into the music that we're talking about and then you research where did the song come from. And I'm not saying we didn't make songs back then that meant nothing. Bird, 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 bird is the word. Okay, fine. But. There was a lot of music that had incredible backstories or incredible symbolism. Like a lot of Bob Dylan's work was using symbolism to talk about drugs and alcohol at a time when you really couldn't talk about it in music without being canceled. You know, the cancel culture of the 60s, basically. If you look at like, what's his name? Dan Fogelberg, like tons of his songs are directly out of his life. Like Leader of the Band is actually about his dad. Auld Lang Syne is actually about a girlfriend from high school that he had a brief re-encounter with. And, like, we used to have music that meant something, that had some kind of story behind it. Meatloaf's Bat Out of Hell, as incomprehensible as some of it is, was actually a score for a musical that was only ever performed once. And then he added, I think, two songs to the album to fill the album out. And the whole album, from the beginning to the end, tells a continuous story. Like, we don't have any of that shit anymore. Now, you know, I think when the song came out about I Don't Want No Scrub as a scrub, a guy that can't get no love, like when that song came out in the late 90s, that was the beginning of the end. Like it didn't make any sense. It was stupid as shit. Like when you started having music that was like, not an aberration, like the average song only had like 10 words in it repeated, like that's when it died.
Yeah. Well, and I see this happening to church music too, right? It's hard for me to explain why I struggle with modern church music, because as a classical singer, I'm totally like, that's what you're singing about most of the time when you're singing classical works. Okay. And they have all these layers of music and text and meaning built into it. And then I'm like, I'm not finding that in the modern church music, unless it's serious church music, which is, you know, anyway, that's something I was trying to explain to somebody and they're like, I don't get it.
Did you ever see the South Park? that they did about Christian Rock?
No, I should go look at that.
Oh, my God. It's so spot on that anybody who loves Christian Rock is probably offended about it because it's so spot on. He's like, all you do is take old songs and replace, like, Baby and Girl with Jesus. And then he makes this bet with Kyle that he can get a platinum record, and they put a band together, and they becomes a huge hit, but it turns out in their little fantasy world, you don't get a platinum record, you get a myrrh record if you're in Christian Rock. So he blows the whole thing because he's pissed off and he loses a bet over it because it wasn't really platinum. But the best part in it is when they're doing the album cover, and he has, I think, Butters and one of the other kids with him, and he's like, to get this picture, what we have to do is we all have to not look at the camera and look like we're too cool to look at the camera. And, like, the two look off to the side, he looks off to the distance, and then the camera clicks, and when it clicks, they square it off, and you go, holy shit, that could totally be a Christian album cover. Exactly. I mean, the whole thing is just, and they end up, like, the way they get their shot on stage is they lure this heavy metal Christian band back into a, like, a storehouse. They tell them they want to pray with them before they go online, and when they go in there, they lock their ass in there, and they take their spot on stage, and the whole thing is freaking hysterical. And the lead singer of that band's name is Skyler, right? Like, they just push every bit of that envelope with it. And I wonder, will South Park stay that way? Because they are still around. I don't know if they're going to stay that edgy.
I mean, the Simpsons are still around. I'm shocked.
Yeah, I think they've worn it out, though.
Yeah, they keep predicting things, though.
Yeah, they do. But, I mean, that goes back to the Tracy Ullman show.
Yeah,
right?
I remember the Tracy Ullman show.
That was in the 80s that the Simpsons actually started. I think it was early 90s when they actually came out as their own thing.
Yeah. Yeah, American Legend is on Rumble, it looks like.
Well, he said his YouTube channel, and I can't find his YouTube channel at all. He actually mentioned his YouTube channel.
Oh, okay.
He said he only has, like, 30 subscribers or something. But, like, I don't know what conversation you're having here, American Legend, but it doesn't make any sense to what we're talking about. Maybe I'm seeing it completely out of sequence because it's coming from Rumble and populating here. But I looked to see what your YouTube channel was, and it doesn't seem to be there. I love Operation Mindkind, Queensryche. I can't remember anything that I heard 10 minutes ago, but I know all of the lyrics to the entire Queensryche album somehow.
Well, I think there is something with the story, because the more modern examples that came up are people who tell stories with their songs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of telling, actually. So, well, we're coming up on an hour, guys.
Two hours.
Yeah, 2 hours.
But have we talked about snakes enough?
No, I mean, I feel like, let me see.
Hold on. Does anybody want a snake podcast? Would you, like, Jack clearly loves talking about snakes. You see him light up. Would you like a once a month snake podcast?
The Snake Cast with John and Jack.
I'm 100% sure, John, that people would love that.
I have a new YouTube channel. It's called SOE Reptiles. You can check it out. We've been putting stuff there. I've also got an Instagram for it. For some reason, when I post from my new Instagram, it auto-populates to my personal Facebook, which I don't know why it does that, but we've got a bunch of content and stuff if you're interested in it. I've been trying to separate them. You can see them.
Yep.
I guess, no, we didn't have our viewer count dropping when we spent 30 minutes on it.
You didn't. I mean, we went 45 minutes, really. So.
Really?
Well, I mean, prepared to go 2 full hours on snakes. I was like, I'll just learn more about snakes than I've ever known.
But, I mean, we generally talk about whatever they type out. I mean,
yeah.
The conversation is generally led by the audience. That's how my live every night is. I get on and I go, look, we can talk about anything you want. It's on you to guide this conversation. Otherwise, we're just going to talk about what I want.
Yeah.
The Snake Shed. We're getting good names here. The Snake Shed, the Snake Podcast.
Yeah, we've got it already. We've got music for it. We've got everything.
So if you want to do it, I'll come on whenever you want me to. You just have to tell me, like, a couple days in advance.
Oh, for ours? Yeah, I'll do whatever you want, man.
Whatever.
Yeah, you can launch a new one, and we'll just do it on yours, whatever you want to do.
I like when I have, like, y'all on simulcast. I think we reach more people that way.
For sure.
Especially long-term, I mean.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean,
it's not something I'd want to do every week or anything, but monthly, yeah, I'd be down with that. I mean, it's an interesting subject, and I think it's a subject that has a lot of room for education because there's a lot of people afraid of them that don't want to be, but they just are.
How about you just keep tagging me in the snakes you think I should have? I will get them, and then we will bring them on the podcast.
Then we'll talk about them. Do you have an indigo yet?
I don't. I don't have an indigo. Moving them state lines isn't it? Same with black pines now. You can't just
Black
them.
Pines are harder to get than indigos.
I heard something interesting the other day. They're talking about all these you've got all these ball python morphs, right? And now they're doing it in Burmeses and retics. And a dude said, nobody wants to talk about this as a breeder, but those are inbred animals for the most part. And when you have a clutch hatch out, you have 35 eggs and 10 of them have no eyes. It's on you to eliminate that entire clutch. Oh, you should not send that thing out, even though you've got a few good ones. You're really screwing your customers by sending that out. And he said,
or like, you know, if you're gonna like have the ones that look okay, but they clearly have a genetic issue, then sell them to pet keepers, not breeders.
Yeah,
and be clear. This animal's not really a good animal to breed. I mean,
and this dude said you know, they've banned importation of Burmese pythons and retics. All of the retics that are in existence in captivity right now, all of the wild caughts, they're going to die within the next 2 to 3 years. There will be no more wild caught DNA.
Really? Huh. That's interesting. Now, on your indigo, John, the one thing you could do, get yourself a big ass yellowtail Crebo.
We can get Crebos for sure.
They just
tend
to be a little nastier.
I'd like to have mangroves. We're not supposed to have those here either.
Why not?
Rear fang.
You can own venomous.
Same thing with a lot of permitting and paperwork.
Really? Because here we can own whatever the fuck we want. We can have cobras and shit.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want them, but we can have them.
Atlanta just did something, Georgia just did something weird a couple years ago, and they said you can't have no Burmese pythons. I think it was Burmese pythons. Can't have Burmese pythons or big tegus, but you can have rear fang now. No paperwork.
Is GMO corn being banned, John?
I don't know. I do recall hearing something about that, though. They're going to try to go after all the GMO stuff. I did just see, and I don't think they'll ever get it to go through, but I thought they voted on it, that they're going to remove all sugary drinks and candies from EBT, so food stamp program. And did you know that you can buy pet food on EBT? You can buy dog food, cat food?
See, I saw this dude on X, and I actually liked his proposal, as radical as it sounded. We should get rid of all EBT food stamp type shit, 100% of it. No, none. But anybody that wants it, we should have some facilities. Anybody that needs food can go get all the rice and beans they want for free. No limit. Mm-hmm. Take as much as you want. Bags, like two bags at a time or something, so somebody doesn't back up a semi-truck and say load it up. You won't starve. It's a complete-ish protein, and you won't want to stay there with it. Like, that's not what you want to rely on for the rest of your life. And it, you know what? It ain't that much different than it used to be. I remember in the 80s that they had things where you could go and get, like, powdered eggs, cheese.
We were on it.
Milk.
We were on it.
My grandmother was on it. And I'm like, Grandma, do we need this? She goes, the sons of bitches take my money. I'm getting it back, right? Like,
yeah.
And, you know, she was Ukrainian, so, like, there was, like, the giant – massive cheese block of like Velveeta before Velveeta was really a thing.
We got
and
government cheese.
You would make pierogies because the cheese and potato pierogies like out of that. So
it was a Crisco thing full of peanut butter.
Yep.
It was government cheese. It was a bag of oatmeal.
Yeah.
And there was a couple of, every now and then there was fresh veggies in there. We have a food bank in town. We constantly have who can help pay my bill. I can't pay my rent. Who can feed my kids? Every day we have that on there. But the food bank here constantly, I get a call from the food bank. Hey, I have a pallet of XYZ. Would you like it to feed to your animals? They literally
get those here too.
Yeah. They can't give enough of the food away to people.
Well, it's always like, I have 7 boxes of avocados that nobody wants. And I'm like, what? That's like, that's the best part you got today. Like, I'll make guacamole for years, but I mean, I'll feed it to my animals.
Do you know what this is, Nicole? The guy said government cheese makes the best mac and cheese. It also makes great Welsh rabbit.
Mm.
There's no rabbit in Welsh rabbit.
I'm sure there's not.
No, it's basically cheese soup
Oh, that sounds good.
It's like a thick cheese soup. And then if you're Ukrainian, you take clarified butter and throw onions in it and cook them until the onions are translucent. And then you take your bowl of Welsh rabbit, which is cheese soup, and you put a ladle of that butter and onions on top of it, and then warm pieces of rye bread.
TSP 25, baby.
Give Ken Daniels that as a peasant food project. Yeah.
You know, he's coming to my place, right?
No, I did not know. That's
he's
good.
He'll be here on the 23rd because I'm teaching cheese making.
Oh, okay.
John and Amanda are invited to for free, of course. And we're doing a pairing of cheeses with foods. So he's overseeing that. Like, I'm getting a whole bunch of cool cheeses from the fromagerie in Sparta. And then we're finishing the class with ways to use whey. So he's going to use that to extract for mocktails.
So, he's a cool dude.
Yeah. Yeah, I was really excited when he said he'd come up. And then he's staying an extra day so I can – I'm because of how things are changing here, I need some time with some people who have worked in the industry. What's it called? I can't think of it. Like restaurant industry.
Oh, yeah.
There's a word that's missing right now because apparently
I'm not sure.
My brain turned off, but yeah.
I mean, there's another thing. He's a sommelier, right? He's a sommelier.
And yeah.
He's a sommelier not just for wine. He's a right. Somm for wine.
Bourbon.
He's a somm for cheese. He's a somm for spirits.
Mm-hmm.
But it's harder. Like, people think you just go do that. You don't. There's like boards and testing and all kinds of shit to actually get those certifications.
Yeah. Hospitality is the word I couldn't think
hospitality.
Of.
Hospitality, there
the
you
hospital-
go.
So I'm talking to a lot of people in the hospitality world just about some things because we've been opening up rentals here. And
gotcha.
I'm not from that world, so.
Gotcha.
I'll be like, here's your coffee. Have a nice day.
All right, I think we need to wrap, though.
Yeah, it is time to wrap. Let's go once around the horn.
All right.
John Willis, SOE Tactical Gear. I do a live on my YouTube every night around 9 o'clock. Join in, and we'll see you there.
Yep.
I'm Jack Spirico, host of the Survival Podcast, 17 years running, over 3,700 episodes. If you like anything we talked about today and you want to know more about it, go to my site, thesurvivalpodcast.com, and fill out the search bar and hit it. I guarantee you'll find dozens of episodes on any of these subjects. Also, we are just announced the dates for our fall workshop, and I put out a video on my YouTube channel. And you can check that out and see that we're going to have a new venue this year. We're going to be at a 300-acre YMCA camp, which is going to be pretty badass. And I put in the video, I did some of the facilities that we'll have and all that. So check that out and consider coming and follow the instructions. Because if you're not ready to go to buy a ticket on the day we launch, Nicole, are they going to get a ticket?
No.
No. So come on out.
No, that facility is badass. Like lots of flushing toilets and not porta potties.
Yep, that'll be cool. We still have got to get a thing to put in one of them. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do know. I know what you're talking about.
For the people that don't know. I don't want to ruin it.
Yeah.
But we need a thing that will be there. And
we
then
can
people,
discuss
Wah!
That kind of thing.
That's like, it's fun. It's all good. Anyway,
it's all part of the fun. It's part of the experience. All right, I'm Nicole Soss from the Link Free in Tennessee podcast. And if you are interested in the cheese class you just heard about, it is the 23rd. of August, Saturday morning. I was actually trying to add to stage a screen share, but whatever. LivingFreeInTennessee.com. It's called Curds and Connection. And
go ahead. Keep going. I got you.
Yeah, that's okay. Wrong one. Curds and Connection, soft cheeses. We're going to teach you how to make paneer and chèvre. And we're also going, what's the third cheese? Feta. So that you get through the whole process of cheese making from separating the solids from the liquids to also being able to make curd, cut curd, cook curd if you need to. And as I said, it includes a very special farm to table pairing, and we're doing local cheeses as well as international cheeses from some local cheese providers here. And Chef Ken's going to oversee that. So get your tickets while you can. It is limited, of course, and that's an hour east of Nashville. So that's what I'm doing. That's the focus this month, guys. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week. Next month. Make it a great week. Run you round. They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay.
show you a better way. Revolution.